live at Buffalo Wings and Rings. Brought to you by Miller Lite. It's Miller time. Old True. Buffalo Wings and Rings. Game time just got better. On the First Star Logistics Bengals Radio Network.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to Bengals Pep Rally. We're on ESPN 1530. It is Bengals bye week, but we still got a lot to talk about, and it's Friday, so that starts with the letter F. Friday here at Buffalo Wings and Rings includes football, fun, food, family, friends, a lot of good things here at Buffalo Wings and Rings, and we're at the location. Yeah, what's that?
Food.
Yeah, I got that in there first.
Food.
Now I get along. Yeah.
Plenty of good food.
Yeah,
there.
No question. We're at the location in Crestview Hills, Kentucky, 2809 Dixie Highway, and we'd love to see you if you're cruising the area, and if you're trying to think of something to do, why don't you jump in your automobile and join us over here? Be a lot of fun. The number is 859-331-9464. If you want to call and reserve a table, we'll get that done for you as well. Jim Breach is here with me. I'm Dave Lapham, and we're going to be talking Bengals, obviously, here at the bye week. And, Jim, you know, the Bengals right now with a 2-3 mark, and when you look at it, they have not won the turnover battle in any game. They've either been even or minus 7 on the season, and they're 2-3. And when you look at the last opponent, the Buffalo Bills, they haven't lost a turnover. They're either plus or even, and they're 3-2. So, I mean, if the Bengals can respect the ball a little bit more, who knows?
Isn't it amazing? Because, I mean, if you look, what was this, the fourth time that Marvin is in his coaching regime that they've won after losing by two or more on the turnover battle?
Only 15th in team history. Only 15th time in team history.
It just shows. I mean, if you can hang on to the football, you have a very good chance. And right now, they're playing pretty doggone well. If they can hang on the ball, allow themselves some more possessions, they're going to do really well. And maybe get a few turnovers.
Right. Good part of the game last week, they were -3 up until the very end when George and I look ahead the inners. When you're -3, you lose 91% of the time. So you only win 9%. When -2, you lose 82.5% of the time. So you only win 17.5%. The fact that they beat a team like the Buffalo Bills, who are playing really good football, and the reason that they're winning is they don't turn the football over, and they are causing turnovers. You know, the Bengals really did a good job in winning that game at home against the Buffalo Bills, who played their brand of football, but the Bengals had a little bit more juice at the end of the football game.
They did, didn't they? It was fun to watch, and they hung in there because it would have been easy to get frustrated with the turnovers and they really had opportunities, and they had opportunity to put a lot of points on the board, and yet they hung in there and able to pull the game out.
The Bengals scored 20 points, the most the Buffalo Bills have given up all year. When they only gave up 17 to Atlanta on the road down there in Atlanta, they only gave up 16 to Denver. You know, nobody was scoring points against them, and 20 points isn't a ton, but the Bengals' first team to crack 20 against them and get a win, so, you know, that's all very important. And to go into the bye week at 2-3 as opposed to 1-4 is light years difference.
Well, you think, I mean, when they started off 0-3, they were way behind in the division already.
Right.
And now they're only a game back. Could be a game and a half or could be half a game with Pittsburgh, depending on what happens this week.
The interesting thing with the Pittsburgh matchup, Jim, this is crazy. I was just taking a look at some of Pittsburgh's numbers. Pittsburgh, for whatever reason, defensively, they're having a heck of a time stopping the run. Now, Jacksonville smoked them for like 200 yards rushing. They had a 90-yard touchdown run against the Pittsburgh Steelers in that game, so it can kind of skew it when you're only a few games into the season. But still, they're giving up 136.6 yards per game on the ground, 28th in the NFL, 5.1 a rush, 31st in the NFL. They're giving up 139.6 passing, 136.6 rushing. They're giving up just 3 more yards a game passing. They're number one in the NFL against the pass, and they're only allowing they're only allowing 5.36, first in the league. They're allowing 5.1 on the ground. I mean, they're killing people. They're stingy in the air, and people, you know, have gassed them so far on the ground. And the beauty of that, the Kansas City Chiefs are averaging 156.2 yards a game on the ground, second most in the NFL, 5.7 a rush, leading the NFL. So you got to figure Kansas City in Kansas City could maybe continue to hurt the Pittsburgh Steelers on the ground. And, you know, they come in here hobbling a little bit when the Bengals go to Pittsburgh next week. Who knows?
Exactly, who knows? And I think that's the second week in a row they've given up over 200 yards rushing. So they're really struggling, which is so un-Pittsburgh-like. Even when they were struggling on their defense the last few years, they were still able to stop the run very well.
Right. Well, we're going to talk a lot more about the Cincinnati Bengals, where they are during their bye week here with respect to that bye. We're going to take a quick break right here. When we come back, we're going to hit the Tri-Health Injury Report. And obviously the biggest news to talk about with respect to that injury report, Tyler Eifert on injury reserve for the rest of the season, had back surgery yesterday out in California. So we'll talk about that and other injuries that the Bengals are licking their wounds here during the bye week. And we'll do that as soon as we come back. Right now, though, you're listening to Bengals Pep Rally, presented by Miller Lite, live at Buffalo Wings and Rings on the First Star Logistics Bengals Radio Network. Welcome back to Bengals Pep Rally. And once again, we're presented by Miller Lite. We're at Buffalo Wings and Rings on our location this particular weekend, this Friday, I should say, is 2809 Dixie Highway. We're in Crestview Hills, Kentucky. If you're cruising the area, stop by. We already have quite a few regular fans here with us, our Friday fans at Buffalo Wings and Rings. And we're going to, I'll give you a little itinerary, what we've got in store for you. Jim Breach is here with me, Dave Lapham, for the first. We're here for all 3 hours. We'll be talking the first hour. And then in the second hour, Joe Walter. From 4 to 5 o'clock, Joe Walter, big offensive tackle from Texas Tech, had a supreme career with the Cincinnati Bengals. In 1988 Super Bowl season, in my opinion, Joe Walter and Anthony Munoz were the best tandem of offensive tackles in the National Football League, no question about that. And Joe will be joining us. And then in the final hour, from 5 to 6 o'clock, we got Kyle Kasky, Bengals running back coach. I think his son Olsen will be coming with him as well. He'll be bringing Olsen along, so we'll catch up with Coach Kasky in that third hour as well. What I want to talk about now, Jim, is it's time for the Tri-Health Injury Report, and obviously the biggest injury to discuss is Tyler Eifert going in injury reserve for the entire season. He went and had his back operated on again out in California. This is his third back surgery. Had one in college, and this is his second back surgery in the National Football League. That's tough. I mean, once your back starts betraying you like his is, I mean, it doesn't get better. Let's put it that way. It's always a new 100%, and it's never the 100% that it started with before you had your initial back surgery.
No, it doesn't seem that way. And I'm sure most of us have had some back issues at some point in time, but I don't know how many of us have gone under the knife. And to have it done three times, playing a position that he gets hit a lot, you catch a lot of balls in the middle of the field, it's just it's not an encouraging sign, to say the least.
No, it really isn't. And you think about tight ends in the middle of the football field, like you mentioned, between the numbers they do a lot of their damage. They're not getting out of bounds, and they're getting smacked every time they catch the football. Tyler Eifert has had multiple back surgeries. Gronkowski has multiple back surgeries. Jimmy Graham has been beaten up. Even Reed, a smaller, physically in stature, a smaller tight end with the Washington Redskins, has a hard time staying healthy. They use him as the detached tight end in the middle of the football field. So it's a brutal position to play in today's NFL. The only guy that seems to have avoided injury and has played a really long time is Jason Witten. Jason Witten, for whatever reason, has avoided the injury hex, but so many of these tight ends are 6'5", 6'6", even 6'7", 250 to 270 pounds. Big guys, you know, that can run. I mean, can run in the 4.5s, 4.6s. So you have all that force, and somebody hits you, and then you have the initial hit, Jim. Then you go to the ground with all these, you know, artificial surfaces. That second hit when you hit the ground is the one that jars your organs and moves your spine around and all those kind of things. I mean, that's serious punishment right there. That's car wrecks.
Yeah, probably several times a game for those guys. And, you know, anybody in the middle of the field is going to be hit a lot. And linebackers kind of fall in that category, too. Greg Olsen is another one. For the most part, has avoided injury. He got injured this year. But I don't know. You know, I was Gronkowski. I know out of college he had it. I think that was one of the things that why the Bengals went in the second round.
Yep.
It's a tough position. Some guys, and you know as well as I do, some guys seem to be able to avoid injuries. Some people seem to be more susceptible.
Right.
And those who are more susceptible, it doesn't seem like it gets better.
To me, you know, Tyler, and not knowing what the surgeries are, I mean, the one he had in college and then the one that he had, you know, last offseason, and now he's having the other surgery. And most of them these days are scope procedures where they'll take out the herniated disc. And that's what we're talking about, is herniated discs. Now, the question is it the entire disc? Is it a portion of the disc that was herniated? You don't really know. I mean, those things aren't made public, obviously. But when people say that this injury has no relation to his prior surgery last offseason, maybe not exactly. Maybe it's not the exact same disc that they're operating on again, if there was any disc left in there. But I can tell you that, you know, I talk about my cousin who was a great basketball player, and he had a back surgery and was never the same. You know, lost a lot of his explosiveness, the spring in his, you know, his back just was never the same, allowing him to play the same way. And he had a partial disc removed initially, and the doctor told him, even with that partial disc being removed, that is going to affect the disc above it and below it, because now you have some of that gone. And it puts so much pressure on the other discs, they have to compensate. And he had to go back and get the rest of the disc removed. And he said, now it's even going to be more so, where it's going to affect the disc above it and the disc below it with all the pressure, and your back has to try to adjust and compensate. So he said, your back's never going to be the same. So to say that there's no relation to the other surgeries is baloney. I mean, it's like if you say, I have a knee injury and I had the surgery, but now I'm running a little differently to compensate, I pulled my groin. That pulled groin is directly related to the knee injury.
Absolutely.
You know, it's like the leg bone's connected to the knee bone's connected to the backbone. That old song, it's true. I mean, your whole body is connected. And when you're talking about a spinal column with vertebrae on it, if you take one of those vertebrae out, the other vertebrae are going to act differently. They're going to try to compensate, fill in spaces, you know. And, I mean, to say that – and I understand, literally, if you go, you know, oh, it has no – the surgery he had in the off season is not the cause of this injury. Okay, maybe not. But maybe the surgery he had in college, if he didn't have the whole disc removed, maybe that's the one that's causing him problems. They have to go take the rest of that one out if there was any left. So it's like once you start having those kind of surgeries, they're all interrelated, and those discs and everything start performing, you know, to try to compensate for the injury, and that's where you have the issues. And a lot of times guys go in for more than one procedure, just like Gronk, just like Tyler Eifert, and I feel so sorry for the guy. You know, and then a lot of times, my cousin, it wasn't like he got jarred in a car wreck or hit like in a football game. It was not congenital, but he had like his spinal column was not as strong as other people's. And that's where it started, was the actual spinal column with the vertebrae attached to. And everybody's body's different, and everybody reacts differently, and everything that goes along with it.
Yeah, it's such a, how do you account for that? I mean, there's some way of testing it. Obviously, you can test for core strength.
Right.
But how do you tell, you know, they talk about guys who have spinal columns that narrow, so they're probably not really a good idea to play football.
Right, up by the neck.
Yeah,
right.
Exactly. Yeah, I think about, how many people do you know have done an Achilles? Say you did your right Achilles playing basketball.
Right.
How long before they're going to do the left one?
Yep.
And are you more susceptible when it starts happening to your back or any other part of your body?
Sure. I mean, when my cousin had his done, the doctor said to him, it's like if you had a tooth pulled and you didn't have the space filled where the tooth was pulled, your other teeth are going to start to move and try to compensate for that space. Some people, it'll do more than others. Everybody's body's different. Everybody reacts differently. But once you start having part of disc removed or all of discs removed that are herniated, you're going to have a reaction up and down your spine. Your spinal column and your vertebrae are never the same. Never the same. Individually and in their entirety, because there's going to be a lot of – it just stands to reason. If that space is vacated, the vertebrae above it and the vertebrae below it are going to be stressed and asked to do things that they weren't asked to do before.
Don't they have injections, different things that they can put in there to replace them?
Cortisone and oh, I see what you're saying. Well, what they can do is fuse it. But if you get your back fused, you know, if they fuse and fill that area in and they fuse that, you're not playing football anymore. I mean, you can function. You can have a day-to-day life, but trying to do some things athletically that, you know, you have to do in order to play in the NBA or the NFL or whatever with a fused back, that's a dicey
he's
animal
even
there.
Given up. He's a very good golfer, and right. He's given up playing golf and the right. Twisting movement. And
yeah, it's sad when I
– But
you
then
know,
what do you do at the end of this year? I mean, right. His contract's up.
Well, I think, you know, I think he's going to get offered a one-year deal. It's not going to be a franchise tag number. That's between $8 and $9 million. I don't see a team going out there and franchise tagging him. The Bengals are the only ones that can do that, and I don't see how they can do it. I mean, unfortunately, he's going to be playing, haven't been available to them for far less than half the games that he could have played because of these injuries. So I think that he'll probably get a one-year contract, you know, like a prove-it year,
right,
either with the Bengals or somebody else. And then, you know, if he can stay healthy and put together a great year like he did when he went to the Pro Bowl, and then unfortunately got hurt in the Pro Bowl, you know, with his ligament damage to his ankle in that Pro Bowl, and had those issues that waited for surgery, and then it cost him the beginning of the following year and the training camp and regular season. So, yeah, I just wonder. I wonder if the Bengals make an offer, I wonder if Tyler says, you know what, you know, I feel like you guys have been good to me, you've been patient with me, and I'm going to try to show you that I'll play here for a year, and maybe we'll talk at the end of that year. Or maybe he says somebody may offer him, you know, $2 or $3 million more than the Bengals are offering him, and he may go there for 1 year. Who knows?
It's happened.
It definitely has happened.
Now, would they do a Joel Embiid type off, you know, they have an incentive laden 2 or 3 years, something like that, and all accounting for the amount of time he plays or how many games he's on the field, something along those lines.
Yeah, I guess it would have to be an NFL minimum salary, you know, for the beginning, because nobody would want to get, you know, you get put on the hook for a big number. It's so unfortunate because the kid is, no question, a gifted, unbelievable player. And when you look at it, even though he played in only the first two games, that's the other thing. When you think about Bill Lazor has not had Tyler Eifert or John Ross in any of the three games. So, you know, Tyler Eifert and John Ross, they were both available against the Bengals' first two games of the season, against Baltimore and against Houston. They were available in those games. They have not played. Either of those two guys have played at Green Bay, at Cleveland, or against Buffalo. So Bill Lazor, that speed weapon on the outside, and then the big tight end in the middle field. Now, Tyler Kroft has stepped up.
He really has.
And has done some great things for the Bengals. But Tyler Eifert is a rare bird in that area. And when I think about it, Jim, I look back to that Houston game, and even though Tyler Eifert only played a little bit this year, I think he's involved in a critical play. What if he didn't step out of bounds? What if he had caught that touchdown pass? The Bengals win 16-13. Now they don't make a change at coordinator probably because it's like, we're working our way through it. I mean, honestly, it's like the fact that was such a disappointing play. He stepped out of bounds, the first one to touch the ball when he came back into the field to play and caught the touchdown pass that was later negated. That thing's massive because, you know, it's like this offense is going nowhere. We're going to have to make the decision. I wonder if they would have made that same decision if they had won that game 16-13. We'll never know. I mean, it may have prolonged whatever that decision was going to be made, but I'm not saying that, you know, Tyler Eifert stepping out of bounds and stepping back in bounds and catching the ball cost Kenzie his job. But that was a critical play in that football game.
It really was.
And you lose the game, you don't score a touchdown, and a move is made. So Tyler Eifert, in limited snaps, a little bit, he's part of the storyline. He's part of the storyline in this season's action for sure. It's crazy. You know, other guys injury-wise, Jim, that we can talk about, Adam Jones. Adam Jones has a lower back issue. I think he just needs rest. My understanding is there's no surgery or anything like that on the horizon for him. Dre Kirkpatrick has a bruised shoulder. He just needs rest as well. Andy Dalton might have had difficulty playing this week. He had enough swelling where he was in a boot. So now you have, you know, a full 2 weeks, and he was in a boot even after practice on Tuesday. So now all that swelling can go down, and, you know, he can get his range of motion back and be able to play more effectively
it's
against Pittsburgh.
Probably good timing for the bye week right now.
No doubt. And the other one is Jerron Smith, who's got a foot ankle injury, and he's been out a long time. I mean, initially they thought, you know, 3 weeks. So there's something more than just, you know, a sprained foot and a sprained ankle. There's something going on there.
That usually, that kind of, to me, leans toward high ankle sprain, you know?
Yeah, and it's not. I checked on that, and it's not. But it's in his foot and his ankle. So, you know, I'm like, I wonder what's going on. If that's the case, now, you think about, okay, Tyler Eifert going to injury reserve opens up a roster spot. And you got to think, all right, I'll go to the practice squad, and I'll take Hardy Nickerson Jr. up. And I'll alleviate C.J. Uzama's special team snaps because he's going to have to play more tight end with Tyler Eifert not in the mix. You know, Tyler Kroft, obviously. Ryan Hewitt's banged up with his knee. So now you bring Hardy Nickerson up to take special team snaps, and that kind of leaves C.J. Uzomah and let him play a little bit more tight end. But if Daron Smith is going to be out for an extended period of time, you may have to go to your practice squad, somebody else's practice squad, a veteran player that's out there, like when they brought Chris Crocker off of the street. He initially came in to play a sub package, like a nickel package.
Right.
And you know, he was so good, his role expanded and everything. So they're going to have to see how these guys heal up. Like you said, the bye week, the timing's good. How do these guys heal up? They'll make personnel decisions next week as they're getting ready for Pittsburgh on how to restock their roster depending on these injuries.
But, you know, that if you think about what happened over the last several years when they draft, for instance, it's all about being able to have people who can step in and play. They got to have depth, right? And we think they have pretty good depth.
Yep.
And that's, I mean, you look around the league, there's teams with a lot more injury problems than the Bengals have. And if you have good depth, you have a chance to play and hang out, you know, hang in the game, hang in there and play games and play the Pittsburghs and play these teams tough. 10 years ago, you didn't have much depth, and you couldn't, if your guys weren't starting, your regular starters weren't starting, you weren't playing very well.
You make a good point, because you look at all the defensive linemen that they're rotating into the game, all the guys in the back end and the secondary, even at the linebacker position, the rotation going at the offensive tackle position. A lot of it's not due to injury. Some of it's ineffective play by the offensive tackles. Others just that guys deserve snaps.
Right.
They're playing so well. It's like we got a bunch of guys that can play. Coaches say, you deserve to play some. If you go out there and play well, you're going to expand your role. And that's nothing but good for competition.
Like Jordan Evans, that last game against Indianapolis in the preseason. Like, this guy's all world. Now, obviously, things change when they get into the regular season.
Well, he pulled his hamstring. So, you know, he's been deactivated with hamstring injury. That bye week's good for him too, Jim, because he'll come back into the fray.
And he's so athletic.
He is. I mean, he definitely is. And but you have so many guys that, you know, are in the rotation on the defensive side of the football team. Paul Gunther has no problem playing any of them, feels comfortable with them. And you know how it is. If a guy comes into the huddle and he hasn't really played much, like, I wonder how this guy will do. But they come into the huddle, and it's like, oh, I played with you. You're good. I know you're good. I can communicate with you. We've done it before.
It's all about gaining confidence, right?
No question. And the more guys that can take snaps, the better off you're going to be as a football team. And I know, you know, starters, quote, starters or whatever, don't necessarily like it. But there are so many sub-packages in this game now, and it just depends how many. It doesn't matter who starts or how many snaps you get given the football team. That's the key to any of this stuff. We're going to step aside now, take our second timeout. Jim Breach calls a timeout, and we're going to jump out. And you're listening to Bengals Pep Rally, presented by Miller Lite at Buffalo Wings and Rings on the First Star Logistics Bengals Radio Network. Welcome back once again to Bengals Pep Rally. We're at the Crestview Hills location, 2809 Dixie Highway. Buffalo Wings and Rings in Crestview Hills. We're presented by Miller Lite and the First Star Logistics. Bengals Radio Network obviously is a big deal. We have the guys from First Star Logistics here today having another company meeting, business meeting, with a couple of adult beverages. Never any problem there. And enjoying themselves here at Buffalo Wings and Rings. Good place to work. A great work environment at First Star Logistics if you're interested in getting something done there. We also want to remind folks that all Bengals fans on Mondays, make sure to join the great Lance McAllister and myself, Dave Lappin, for Bengals Line, presented by Bud Light, live at the Holy Grail. Banks from 6 to 9. This Monday from 6 to 7, we have Alex Erickson, who's turned into quite a factor on this football team, not just as a return guy, but at the receiving core as well. And Nick Vigil from 7 to 8 p.m. And I'll tell you what, Jim, Nick Vigil, Vontaze Burfict is dominant. There's no question about it. 13 tackles, everything he does. You know, they talk about Luke Kuechly last night. I heard Tony Romo saying, oh, Luke Kuechly used to call the plays out when I was a quarterback. Vontaze does that all the time. Nick Vigil said 90% of the time Vontaze is calling the play out because of his study on formations and everything. But the guy that they have covering the tough matchup in the nickel is Nick Vigil. They have Nick Vigil covering Shady McCoy out of the backfield, a linebacker on a running back. Tough matchup. And he held up extremely well. He's doing a great job for them, not only in base, but in sub-packages.
So he's like the Thomas Davis for Carolina and
right.
Kuechly, right?
Right.
Yeah, the guy can run, and he's I don't know if he's at Vontaze's level smarts-wise, but his preparation, he's right up there. So these guys together are just exceptional.
It is. I mean, we talk about the killer bees in Pittsburgh. How about the killer V's, or maybe the, I don't know, the voracious V's or something? Vontaze Burfict, and you have Nick Vigil, and you have Vinny Ray. Three V's. So you have three B's in Pittsburgh and three V's in Cincinnati trying to offset
nice
the three
try.
V's.
Kind of a stretch, Jeremy.
The vivacious V's, the something V's or whatever it is, maybe even just killer V's. See if the killer V's can take out the killer B's a couple of weeks in Pittsburgh. That's going to be an interesting football
game. You know, so through five weeks, you know, where the offense had their huge downs and then they've come up much better. The defense, though, has just played an exceptional level the whole way through. I mean, they've been so consistent. You know, if the Green Bay game doesn't end up going to overtime,
right,
they'd be giving up like 240 yards a game right now.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, when you look at it, Jim, they're number one in yards per play allowed, 4.2 yards per play. I'm not talking about yards per rush. I'm talking about pass, running game, 4.2. Leads the entire league. In the last two games, Cleveland and Buffalo, the two wins, they've allowed 3.4 yards per play on 128 snaps. 67 against Green Bay, 67 to Cleveland, 61 at Buffalo. 128 snaps, they've only allowed 3.4 yards per play. That is unbelievable. That is suffocating defensively.
Yeah, you know, to me, the changes they made to increase speed.
Yep.
And they got younger.
Yep.
But their defensive line is playing at such a high level, and it really starts there. One, if you can get pressure. Two, you don't see they're not getting – started a little bit earlier where they were getting gashed in the running game a little bit, but now that seemed to even subside. They're not having – that's not happening as often. And it just seems like they're really melting well together. I mean, their cohesiveness is phenomenal. They're playing so well together as – you know, from the back end to the front, and it really shows. And teams struggle to get in the end zone against them.
They really do.
Teams struggle to move the ball on them.
Yeah. I mean, when you look at it, the mix of size differential, experience differential, you have Carlos Dunlap, the long, tall defensive end, Michael Johnson, another long, tall defensive end, who now is making a huge contribution as he kicks in to defensive tackle and nickel pass rush. And now you have 6'7" Michael Johnson, 6'1", you know, powerhouse Geno Atkins working against with each other. And if I'm a guard, it's like, whoa. I mean, that's a tough dynamic. And really, when Geno Atkins or Michael Johnson got his sack in Buffalo, Geno, he came down inside. He took Richie Incognito and slammed Incognito himself into Eric Wood in the hip. And just, it was like it was make that spare in bowling. He knocked both of those guys down. Both of those guys go flying to the ground. And Michael Johnson comes around the horn all by himself. So Geno does all this dirty work, takes two offensive linemen out of the play. Michael Johnson comes around, and he's just kind of like, you know, sitting there and spying quarterback. And in a very, you know, athletic quarterback, Tyrod Taylor, kind of spies him and takes him to the ground for a quarterback sack. You have six sacks against the Buffalo Bills with a mobile quarterback. Four of them on third down, three of them in the fourth quarter to close out a football game. That's when, you know, you're rushing the passer at key times when you have to have it to close out a game.
Well, you have to figure that they did really well early in the year when they really didn't have opportunities. Teams were just running the ball. They still had the number of sacks. But when it comes to crunch time and you know they're going to be throwing the ball, these guys are just, their eyes are lighting up. You know, the guy that has been interesting to me, and we thought Billings was really going to be a big impact player
right
on the inside. It's Glasgow's
no doubt
how much he stepped up, and I don't think Billings has played nearly as much as we thought he'd play.
I think Glasgow has been, and Chris Spielman, after the Bengals drafted Glasgow, went on radio with Chris Spielman in Columbus. He does a daily show with his daughter, and he goes, "Hey, I'm here to tell you, you know, I think the Bengals did fine in their first, second, third round. This fourth-round pick, they just took Ryan Glasgow. The Ohio State offensive coaches are so glad that guy's gone from Michigan because he dominated them for 4 years. I mean, this kid is he's exactly where he's supposed to be all the time, very physical. I mean, he plays hard. You know, he reminds me a lot of, you know, I'm not going to say he's Tim Crumry, but he plays the game like Tim Crumry would like to play.
Yeah.
Would like to have people play the game. He's that kind of guy. He's very, very physical. And, you know, he's a team guy, you know, wants to do everything and not be out of position to hurt his teammates. I agree. And then, of course, can't say enough about Carl Lawson. This guy, he's Defensive Rookie of the Year. There's not even a second-place guy, in my opinion, the way he's dominating on the edge against, you know, really good players. Joe Thomas, a 10-time Pro Bowl left tackle, they were chipping with a running back to help him. I haven't seen that for a while. I mean,
that's amazing, isn't it?
Buffalo's going max protection with a tight end in the back, and he's beating it. He's beating it and pressuring the quarterback. I'm like, what?
25 pressures in five games, the most by any rookie in 12 years. I know you had that stat recently. That's amazing. I mean, the guy is just, but he's relentless, and he's, I know I saw one where he starts around the edge, and he takes his left hand. He's got him on the left inside shoulder, and he just pushes the guy, and he steps right in for the sack. I
mean, the Reggie White hump move.
Absolutely.
Kind of just like humped him like Reggie did. Reggie would use the lineman's momentum against himself.
But think about this. He's not 6'5", 6'6", right. 290 pounds with that leverage.
Right.
He's 6'1". Now, he might have some leverage that he can get up underneath him, but that guy's up there. That's
he's strong.
He really is strong, and he's so quick.
He can convert speed to power like all the legendary pass rushers, and I'm not going to call him legendary. Taylor, I mean, it was ridiculous how he could convert speed to power and just as you were, he would overpower you. Carl Lawson gets tackles when he converts speed to power on him and hits them, gets them off their feet. I mean, he'll lift these guys. I mean, he plays leverage, gets up underneath them. He's got the bull rush. He's got a spin. He's got the hump move that you were talking about, Jim. I mean, that's all you need.
Well, he's got a good role model, and you look at the way Geno Atkins gets up underneath people, gets that leverage, and he's able to do a lot with guys much taller. So actually, in some cases, those being shorter really helps you get underneath those guys, because it's all about
low
leverage.
Low man wins, yeah. No, low man wins. And a guy that I know you and Box talked to when you were doing the show before the Green Bay game, Jordan Willis. Jordan Willis, he got a sack in the Buffalo game, and Jordan Willis is playing great football. And Jordan Willis, his head coach at Kansas State, Bill Snyder, I've gotten to know over the years for like 25 years. This guy is the ultimate grinder. I mean, there's nobody that grinds other than Saban probably at Alabama, but I mean, this guy grinds, Bill Snyder. And he said, I called him after drafted Jordan Willis. I said, tell me about Willis. The biggest grinder we've had in the program. I said, more than you, coach? He goes, I'm telling you what, this guy is a self-made guy, the biggest grinder, hardest worker, greatest kid. I mean, he said, you guys have a steal. And Jordan was talking about it in the locker room. Him in the third round. Carl Lawson in the fourth round. You look at it. Michael Johnson's a third rounder. Geno Atkins is a fourth rounder. Jordan Willis is a third rounder. Carl Lawson's a fourth rounder.
Tell me the Bengals have some of the greatest picks they've ever had, or second, third, and fourth
round. No question. No doubt. I mean, it's amazing. And, you know, Domantas Peko was a fourth rounder. Robert Gathers was a fourth rounder. They don't have a first-round draft pick on that defensive line. Carlos Dunlap's the second rounder.
Right.
They don't have a first-rounder on that defensive line. And they've got eight guys. Glasgow, fourth rounder. They've got, you know, as many as eight guys that they're rotating in there and playing. They don't have one first-rounder out of that group. It's unbelievable.
That is amazing, and they're unbelievably talented.
Yeah, it is. It's something to behold, and I think it's going to be a big, big factor in their success all season long. You just heard Jim Breach. I'm Dave Lapham. We are doing Bengals Pep Rally. We're presented by Miller Lite. We're live at Buffalo Wings and Rings on the First Star Logistics Bengals Radio Network. Welcome back once again. We are at Buffalo Wings and Rings, 2809 Dixie Highway in Crestview Hills, Kentucky. It is Bengals Pep Rally. Jim Breach, Dave Lapham here with you. Shortly, we are going to be joined by Big Joe Walter.
Joe's when they talk wingspan, he's got wingspan the spare.
No doubt. Joe, you know, they have the technique in pass protection where you jam. They call it jam. And when they allowed offensive linemen to extend their arms, lock their elbows, and punch, Joe Walter had a knockout punch. I mean, when Joe jammed you, you were jammed, man. It was like, he like took your lungs back to your, you know, or your solar plexus back to your spine. I mean, it's like he would jam you and it would take the air out of you, man.
When I was a freshman in college at Cal, Walt Harris was coaching the linebackers.
Yeah,
he became an offensive guru, but he was coaching the linebackers. He says, "Hey, freshman, get over here. We need a tight end to stand in here."
Right.
So those guys are punching, and they're running, right? The linebackers.
Right.
And they're just drooling. Boom, they knock me back. Boom, and pretty soon I'm hurting. I say, "Coach." He says, "Freshman, you can step back. You don't have to get drilled like that." The next day, I got bruises all over my chest. I really didn't want to say anything. You know, I was a freshman. I was afraid.
You know what? That's what I love about you, though, Jim Breach, because, I mean, a lot of kickers don't even – they're not really athletes other than, you know, their ability to kick the football. But you and Doug Pelfrey both, you were, like, all-state and everything in high school. You played some quarterback. You played shortstop, baseball. You played point guard on your basketball team. I mean, you're a hell of an athlete. Pelfrey – he was a scholarship defensive back at Kentucky. You know, I mean, you guys were, I mean, great athletes.
We both played college baseball. He was a heck of a baseball player.
Really? So, I mean, you go in there, though, and give a look. You know, when the offense was running the opponent's plays against our defense on practice, you guys would jump in there and play some wide receiver and do some things. And so, I mean, you guys had really good athletic ability. There's no doubt.
Well, and, you know, the thing is, you stand around a lot and guys start looking at you. And it's like, "Coach, what can I do to help out so I'm not so conspicuous here, you know?"
Big Joe's in the house. Big Joe Walter has made the scene at Buffalo Wings and Rings.
You think Joe does any Santa Claus on the side?
Santa Claus, you think?
I'm telling you, he would be perfect.
All I can say is Joe's big. But how about Jake, the Xavier Musketeer, Jake Walter? He's about 7'9" and still growing.
7'1"?
He's over 7 feet.
Every time I see him, it's like, where's he now? Oh, he's like 6'9", 6'11", 7'1".
Right.
I'm expecting to say like 7'5" one of these days.
We'll get Joe at the top of the hour and catch up with Joe Walter and Jake, who Chris Mack has coming to Xavier, a big recruit for Xavier University. When I say big, yeah, we're talking 7 feet. I think he's like a size 18 shoe, something like that. It's like 20, a size 22, 20 shoe.
Oh, I think, Bob Lanier range.
Yeah. What did Shaq have? Shaq had like a 22 or something, didn't he? 22. So Jake's closing in on him, bro. He's closing. I mean, you have to go kill cows every day to get the shoe leather. I mean, my goodness, unbelievable. But we'll be talking about Big Joe and Jake. And also want to remind folks, if you want to be part of action during the week, make sure to join us at Patrick's Sports Bar. We're going to be there this Wednesday for Bengals Game Plan presented by Bud Light. Dan Horde and myself will be there. That's on Crookshank Road. Patrick's over on the west side on Crookshank Road. We'll be there from 6 to 8 p.m. on the First Star Logistics Bengals Radio Network. And our guest, we're efforting Kevin Huber. And how about Kevin Huber? I mean, you look at Kevin Huber's numbers, Jim. They are crazy. He's got 13 inside the 20-yard line.
And no touchbacks.
No touchbacks. No touchbacks. Obviously tied for fewest in the NFL. 13 inside the 20 is tied for first. But his plus 13, he's the only one in the NFL that's got a plus 13 ratio. And his average, his gross average, 46.9, is the highest he's ever had in his career. So Huber is drilling the ball.
He is, and their net is really good. Yeah. It's amazing how many guys have over 40 net these days.
Yeah.
I mean, this shows how much has changed. While I was playing, if you had a 40 average, not
big
net, that was good. That was kind of what you were shooting for, 40
right
average. Now they're shooting for 44, 40, 43, 44, 45. The net of 40. That just shows the emphasis they've put on the special teams and field position, really, is what it comes down to.
And they're magicians with the ball. I mean, you know, you look at like Sam Cook from Baltimore. He has so many different ways that he holds the ball, tilts the ball. He has so many ways to deaden the ball inside the 20-yard line, how directional kick it. I mean, they say he has like 10 different approaches when he's punting the football. And Kevin Huber's in that school as well. You know, they'll dip the ball, and it'll be like a kickoff rather than a spiral punt. I mean, the stuff that they're doing, the control they have of the football is amazing, isn't it?
It is, and then you consider, it used to be just catch the ball and punt it. Now it's really a thought-out process, and they work on all these different things. I think always directionally has been important because you want to cut down the field and have less of a return or make it more difficult to return. But Kevin is exceptional at his directional punting.
Right.
Obviously, he's always been incredible at getting the ball inside the 20. and does a great job.
Well, talk about your observation of the kicking competition that went on at training camp. Randy Bullock wins out, but obviously a great kicker. They decided to go with Bullock, but a great kicker goes to the Philadelphia Eagles and hits a game winner from 61 yards out. I mean, he's got a strong, strong leg. What were your observations as season?
Well, I know early it was, I don't think there was a kick to separate them. They hardly missed. As it progressed, it seemed like Randy took the advantage, I think, and particularly in practice.
Right.
He just kept winning, he kept winning, and by the end, he was about 15 points better. That's
right.
A huge number. But it was very apparent watching that Jake Elliott was going to be kicking somewhere.
No doubt.
And he'd do really well. So, you know, he struggled at the beginning there in Philadelphia. Then he hit a 40.
He missed two, right?
And then he hit a 46-yard to tie the game against the Giants, and he hits a 61 in overtime. And I think that's just kind of set him up. Now he's on fire now.
Right.
You know, Randy really has kicked well. The one thing with Randy, I think, we need to see him make a critical kick because he seems to, you know, like against
the Green Bay game.
If he makes that 40,
right.
46 or 48-yarder,
yep.
That's a different game because
yep.
They've got 10. When they score, they're still down three.
Yep.
So it's that kick, you know, the game winner, the kick that puts you up by 10.
The one in Houston the year before.
Right. And for some reason, he's hardly missing, but the ones he seems to have missed have been the ones that everybody remembers. So I'd love to see him hit a few of those. Really gain everybody's confidence, and nobody will be thinking about Jake because there's nothing they can do about it at this point. Now, my thought was they might go with Jake because he really has exceptional. Randy's got a great leg.
Right.
Jake's got a phenomenal leg, and his kickoffs were unbelievable.
Hang time as well, right?
And I know Darren loved the fact that he kicked off so well. So I just think they couldn't do it because of the fact that he was 15 points better.
Right.
Now, I'm sure they're excited that Zane Gonzalez has been struggling in Cleveland, so does it
right.
Take some of the sting away, you know?
Yep, no doubt. And as far as, you know, making clutch kicks, I mean, you were Mr. Clutch. Nobody made more important kicks than you. 9 for 9 in your overtime career with the Cincinnati Bengals. I mean, 9 for 9, Jim. I don't care if they're extra points. I mean, in that situation, you know, that's there's obviously a lot of pressure. How did you approach? What was your approach when you – you know, ran out in the football field to kick an overtime kick to end the game?
It was all about the routine. It was all about the preparation. It was all about going through the things you do. You've done hundreds and thousands of times. Because the one thing is you got to remove yourself from the situation. You can't really spend a lot of time dwelling on whether it's a game-winning kick, game-tying kick, whatever the circumstances are, overtime, put the game in overtime. You can't do it.
Right.
And if you do, then you're probably going to miss the kick because you can't. So you got to focus in on what you've prepared for, and that's why you do. They talk about the routine. That's why guys can putt in big situations because they go through a routine that really removes you. At that point, you're not at the Masters or the U.S. Open. You're just in your head, in your routine, something you've been doing over and over and over. And sometimes you can get into that zone they talk about, and everything slows down, and it's a pretty amazing place to be.
Real quick, Adam Vinatieri. 44 years old, 22 years in the league, has a new snapper and holder this year at that stage of his career. How tough is that to adjust to?
Unbelievable. Unbelievable. A really good holder can make up for the snapping issues.
And that was McAfee, the punter, who's so great.
Exactly. And he did struggle. He was struggling a little bit early. Now he seems to have gotten into routine. So you get the guy might be a great holder, but he's going to do it a little bit differently than what you've been used to. And he had McAfee for so long, so he seems to have settled in now, and he's kicking the ball great again. And, you know, one more year after this, he'll probably break Morton Anderson's record for career points.
Unbelievable. Jim Breach knows of what he speaks in terms of kicking the football and football in general. We're going to be joined by Joe Walter. We take this timeout. We come back for hour number two. Both Jim Breach and Joe Walter voted by you, the fans, as members of the first 50 with the Cincinnati Bengals. How about that? And you are listening to Bengals Pep Rally presented by Miller Lite at Buffalo Wings and Rings. And we are on the First Star Logistics Bengals Radio Network.
All right.
On the First Star Logistics Bengals Radio Network presented by Miller Lite. Live at Buffalo Wings and Rings. Brought to you by Miller Lite. It's Miller time. Old True. Buffalo Wings and Rings. Game time just got better. on the First Star Logistics Bengals Radio Network.
Welcome back to hour number two of Bengals Pep Rally, presented by Miller Lite at Buffalo Wings and Rings, and we are at the Crestview Hills location in Northern Kentucky, 2809 Dixie Highway, and we're presented by Miller Lite, and we're on the First Star Logistics Bengals Radio Network, and I got a couple of members of the Bengals First 50 with us here, Jim Breach and Big Joe Walter. And first, though, guys, we're going to talk about a little sacks promotion. Mike's Car Wash, how about this deal? If the Bengals defense records two sacks in a game, save $6 on Mike's Ultimate Wash the next day. Only at Mike's Car Wash. The Bengals have 18 sacks in five football games. It's tracking a pretty good number. They're the official car wash of the Cincinnati Bengals, is Mike's Car Wash. Mike's also donates a dollar of your purchase to the Marvin Lewis Community Fund. So far, $17,981 has gone to the Marvin Lewis Community Fund. Should be a lot of clean cars out there in Cincinnati this football season, because the Bengals are going to be sacking a lot of people. Two sacks in a game. We might have to do it two sacks in a quarter, the way these guys are getting after it.
Do you think, what if they multiplied it out? So if you have six, you get three times the two.
Yeah, right.
Well, I tell you, you get a lot, $18 off.
I'm telling you. Joe, welcome.
Dave,
welcome,
how are you,
by
buddy?
The way.
Good to see you.
First, let's talk about your son, Jake. You have to be a proud dad.
Absolutely. Very proud.
Jake is, what now, 7 what?
7'1".
7'1".
Yeah.
Size 20 shoe.
Size 20 shoe. Big boy.
Now, how do you, how many times a week you have to go to the grocery to feed 7?
Oh, that's a lot.
I'm telling you.
I was looking at the refrigerator today before I left. There's nothing in it. It's empty.
But that's incredible. I mean, Xavier basketball is nationally renowned. It's not just, you know, a little local yokel basketball. That's a big-time basketball program. You know, Chris Mack heading up that program. And Jake was a premier recruit for him. I mean, they're yeah, excited to get Jake on board. When did Jake really start to blossom, you know, as a basketball player?
I think really he started last year. We ended up with a new, they aren't new, but for us it was new, Indiana Elite. And they're in that Adidas Gauntlet League, so it's a big-time league in the Adidas thing, right?
Right.
And so in a pretty well-known organization in the AAU circuit. And so we were fortunate enough to get on with them last year, and I think that's really where he started to blossom. We were traveling, playing high-end talent, and he realized that he can play at that level. You know, he was having some doubts because nobody around here is as big as he is.
Right.
On that circuit, there's a lot of them that are 7 foot, right? So, and he could play, and he played really well. And then he was kind of getting on the radar this spring. He got on the radar a little bit more, and he just had a fantastic July, and he dropped a lot of weight, was in really great shape. He was averaging in July, he averaged at a 32-minute game, he was averaging 28 minutes
wow,
for a big man.
That's great.
And that
yeah,
was sprinting up and down the court. That's, it wasn't lazy. So that's the one thing that I think sold him.
Yeah, that's what I've heard from people, is that he can run the floor.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, he's not a big guy that's just last man down, getting the low post, you know, and plod along. I mean, he's running the floor. He's making a noise in the open floor.
Yeah, and he's starting to, you know, he's young. He's just 17. So he'll go to Xavier this summer, still 17, won't even be 18 yet.
Now, let me ask you. You saw with Xavier what's happened with Sean O'Mara just at the tail end of last year. It's like this guy just blossomed.
Right.
And I'm sure his expectations this year, that had to be, did that play a factor for you guys to see where, how Sean O'Mara's come along and how it might impact somebody like
Jake? You know,
like
it's funny, Jimmy. I left the decision up to Jake. You know, to be quite frank, I played the devil's advocate. When they committed, or they offered him,
right,
he was wanting to commit right away. And I was, you know, hold off, man. You've got some of these big 10 schools were offering, Indiana, Purdue, Ohio State. They were all coming to the table. And in my mind, he was more of a Big Ten type big guy, right?
Yeah.
And so in the Big East is so fast, and you know, I just think, man, I don't know if you fit that mold.
Yeah.
You got to prove it to me. And so he thought I didn't want him to go there, and we ended up going and having dinner with a couple of players because he hadn't met anybody yet before he wanted to commit, and they sold him on it. And he walked out. We got in the truck, and I said, "What do you think?" And he said, "Dad, if I go to any of these other schools, I don't feel like I have to work as hard. I know if I go to Xavier, I got to work my tail off to get on the court. and academically. Huh. So I said, well, if you're good with it, I'm good with it. I think the other selling factor was Coach Pegues, the big guy, the big man coach.
Yeah.
Just tremendous. He's really excited to have Jake and have a legit seven-footer big man that can play.
What's he going to study? Has he decided yet what he's
thinking? He hasn't decided all over, which is fine with
me. Sure, that age, yeah. So Jackson Hayes, Coach Hayes' son that committed to Texas. Has Jake and Jackson, they worked against each other at all?
Oh, yeah. They went against each other this summer.
Yeah. Good battles,
It was a good battle. Yeah. It was strength against quickness. It was a good game to watch, and they're both good players. They play each other, I think. The first week of the season this year.
Texas Xavier? Wow.
No, Moeller and Cub Cav.
Oh, Moeller. Yeah, I'm talking.
Really still, good.
That's right. They're still in high school.
They're
going to be seniors.
Yeah.
Wow, Moeller Cub Cav battle. That's going to be real.
So he hung pretty well with on the quickness side with him?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. He and, they're two different players. Jackson isn't a big guy. Jake is. Jake, he used his strength against Jackson. Jackson struggled with that.
Jackson's about 190, isn't he?
Yeah.
6'10", 190.
Yeah, Jake's 265.
Right.
And Jackson had a couple of fast breaks, and it is what it is.
Right.
And Jake learned from it, but it was really a really good game. Nobody dominated. Neither one of them dominated each other.
Right. So. That's good. So speaking of dominating, that's what you were in as a tackle for the Cincinnati Bengals. We talked about it in the first hour that – in my mind, in 1988, Anthony Munoz and Joe Walter were the best tandem of tackles in pro football, and you were playing right at the level of Anthony Munoz. I mean, you guys were unbelievable, and your ability to jam people, get those hands out and stun a defensive lineman, just hit in the middle of the chest and stand them up was extraordinary. I mean, what's your biggest memory of that offensive line, that season, and what you guys accomplished?
You know what, I think the biggest thing I remember is just, the group of guys that we had, that was a smart group. We got along really, really well. And Jimmy McNally, he had us prepared week in and week out. I mean, you walked into the office, and he had broken down every player. We'd walk in, and, of course, he'd have the defense on the board and who we were going against. And he'd walk up and go, okay, we'd go over the scouting report, and he'd go over me, and here's what he does, Joe, okay. He'd get over, keep going down the line. He'd get to Anthony, he'd just erase him. So that happened every week. I never got my guy erased.
Jimmy didn't do anything but football, right?
That's all he did.
He had nothing else going on.
Nothing. He loved life.
Still to this day, that's what he's doing.
He's still down there.
He's still working for the Bengals, just breaking down. He sends scouting reports to Paul Alexander. You guys would be like, oh, my God.
Yeah.
He'll break down every single snap of every single opponent that the offensive line is going to go against and, give them tips and all that, and it's amazing. Percentage they're doing this, percentage they're doing that. As you know, the detail, that guy leaves no stone unturned. It's unbelievable.
Right.
Unbelievable.
And that was great. It was fun. It was a great season. I think back to that year and all the guys I played against that are in the Hall of Fame. It was, Reggie White, Reggie. Howie Long, Gastineau, that was his last year.
Yep. But,
got the Too Tall Jones, Randy White, the list goes on and on. And it was really just incredible for me to be that young to play against those guys and to play with the guys I was playing with. It was just, I had a great time.
Talking about building confidence, something like that has got to build your confidence.
Oh, absolutely. And it did. Once 87, Blados and I were kind of going back and forth battling for that spot after they cut Moonpie. And then when 88 came along, or it was late in 87, they said, okay, Joe, it's yours. And then once you get that confidence builder, that was big. And then to go into 88 and to play the way I was playing and knowing the offense, because it takes a couple of years to understand what you're doing. And just keep working, and nobody could stop the jam. I mean, it was Tunch Ilkin and myself were the two big jammers at that time, and nobody could figure it out.
And every single time, you'd hit him right in the sweet spot. You'd stick him right in the sternum, man. You had a bullseye.
I had a blast for it.
I'm telling you, the Jimmy Jammer, that machine that he patented and invented, it should have been the Joe Jammer instead of the Jimmy Jammer. You were the guy that. So when you came, did Jim McNally scout you down at Texas Tech? When's the first time you met Jim McNally, and what's your remembrance of that?
It's funny. I met Jimmy probably a month before the draft. And I wasn't even being looked at. Jimmy Anderson was actually coming to look at a couple of defensive guys.
Okay.
And Anderson called
Rivera.
McNally.
Was it Gabe Rivera?
No, Rivera was before me.
Okay, yeah.
He came out when Rim came out.
Yeah, right. Remington. Yeah, right.
Gabe was an unbelievable
Oh, gosh, he was a beast. But the late, great, God rest his soul.
Yeah. Jeez. So, you know, he came out. Jimmy Anderson called McNally. He was down the next week. He took me out and did a workout. I really wasn't even in shape. I didn't think I was going anywhere, so I was, you know, hitting the beverages.
You were loving life.
I was loving life. And so McNally came and worked me out. And then it wasn't 3 days later, Forrest Gregg called and came and worked me out.
Wow.
And he killed me. I will never forget that workout. I mean, he just absolutely, I was doing up downs. I was doing, and I'm thinking, what is this all about? This is an offensive line play.
Right.
So he told me that McNally called him and said, you need to go look at this guy. This is diamond in the rough. And that's how it all came to be. And so that year that I got drafted, Green Bay was two or three picks after Cincinnati. So I wasn't sure which one I was going to go to, but ended up getting drafted by the Bengals. And when I made the club, it was funny because I thought Eric Stokes.
Yeah.
If you remember him, he had the frozen rope back then, the deep snapper, and he thought he was going to make the club. I thought he was going to make the club, so I thought I was cut. And it was the night, if you remember the fireworks, that's when Ruby had the barge for the waterfront. And I'm on there thinking I'm going home the next day, so I'm going to enjoy my last night. And Collinsworth comes walking up to me and says, hey, big fella, you might want to slow down. Tomorrow's going to be a long day. And I said, what are you talking about? I'm not going to be here. He goes, I said, it'll be a long day on the flight, but that's okay. I can survive. So long story short, I kept going. Schoenert came over and said, big fella, what did Collinsworth say? Slow down. You need to stop. Tomorrow's going to be a long day. And I said, you guys don't know. He goes, I'm with Sam every day. Figure it out, Poncho.
Right,
and so
right.
Oh, a light bulb moment. Wow. So next morning when we went in and we both Eric and I walked right by Frank Smouse.
Frank Smouse, the Turk,
and,
the cut man.
Because we were both nervous. You know, we get into the locker room.
You don't even want to go in the door. You don't want to open that door, do you?
And so you remember the old locker rooms at Spinney, the fence and all that in between. So we're sitting in the locker. Smouse comes in, Stokes, bring me your playbook. And my eyes went, oh, no, this is real now.
Right.
And the next thing, it wasn't, he came back in and he was crying. And it wasn't a second later, McNally, Walter, get your ass in my office. So I walk in there and he's looking up, pointing at me, you better not screw this up. We were up till 1 o'clock fighting for you and all that. Okay. So that's how I got the start. And I'll always think, Obrovic, big OB for not coming back to camp. Because if he'd have been there, I wouldn't have been here. So
unbelievable. Yeah, I had a similar experience with Frank Smouse. I was drafted in the third round, this kid from Nebraska. We were it was in the fourth round, Mike White, and we were the All-American tackles, guards. So it's a battle royale. And I was playing early in the six preseason games, and then the last two or three I wasn't playing much. I'm gone. So I bring my playbook in, the final cut, and I'm thinking, you know, just get ready. So I go walk. Frank Smouse starts looking around me, you know, and he's, like, grabbing other guys. And so I go into my locker and put my playbook down. I'm, like, looking around. It's like, should I do this? So I get my shorts and T-shirt. And, you know, I have your name tag on there with the tape. So I get up the front where all the linemen are, no name tag. I'm like, son of a – he didn't even recognize me. And I'm like, there's his beat. I could feel the heat, you know. And all the linemen start laughing. He's hitting my desk in the closet. They're like, here you go, rookie. I'm like, guys, man, my freaking heart was pounding out of my chest. But those are the days.
I had a Freddie Smouse. So I come in. The first kicker taken in the draft was Rex Robinson out of Georgia.
Yeah.
You know, NCAA record holder. So we're kicking. There's three of us. And Tom Burney, who had kicked in Green Bay. And we're kicking and – same type of thing. You don't really know. I mean, you know how you're doing, but you just don't really know where you stand. Nobody tells you anything. And Frank comes walking out. He goes, Breach, come here. The big man likes you. He goes, the big man. I said, the big man? He goes, the big man.
The biggest man.
I said, cool, thanks.
Yeah. So I see him, Paul Brown, you know, after the cuts and everything, and he goes, congratulations, young man. I said, Coach, you know, I was thinking that you – it's your first mistake. Don't think, you just play. We think, you don't think. Just go play. I'm like, yes, sir. So that's Joe Walter, Jim Breach. I'm Dave Lapham. We are doing Bengals Pep Rally here today, as we do every Friday. We're at Buffalo Wings and Rings. Today we're at the location, Crestview Hills, Kentucky, 2809 Dixie Highway, at Buffalo Wings and Rings. We're presented by Miller Lite and, of course, the First Star Logistics Bengals Radio Network. Welcome back, Bengals Pep Rally, Friday, October 13th. How about that? Halloween's approaching, Friday the 13th. We're presented by Miller Lite at Buffalo Wings and Rings in our location once again, 2809 Dixie Highway, Crestview Hills, Kentucky. And, of course, we're emanating on the First Star Logistics Bengals Radio Network. Joe Walter in the house.
So, Lap, I got to tell
yes,
you.
Jim Breach in the house.
My son, John, turned 13 on Friday the 13th.
Really?
He did, yeah,
wow.
Many years ago.
Wow. That's a special day right there.
Pretty cool.
Very special
cool.
day.
He always wore 13. He played sports. Him and Dan Marino.
So, Joe, I got to get your opinion.
Sure you want it?
The offensive line. Okay, what do you think about the rotation at the tackle position, and what do you think about the offensive line play in general as they're five games in on the bye week here in week six?
First of all, the rotation isn't working. You've gone to this season going to live and die by Fisher and Boyhe, right? My biggest issue is they both look like they've not been coached. They don't look like they have any technique. I think that out of the two of them, I'm being rough here, aren't I? Out of the two of them, I think that Fisher's probably got a better chance to make it.
Why do you say that?
I just think the way his head's blown up, I just think they've gotten into him so bad, I don't know that he can come out of it. I think that, and I may be wrong, and I hope I am for him.
I mean,
I think he's a really good talent. And a
he's
good
athletic.
Athlete.
He is athletic.
But I just think he's in his head, and you can kind of tell when he's playing, when a mistake happens, it's, oh, here we go again type mentality. Or they put in Smith, and, you know, you're not really teaching him anything. Right. I think the biggest issue, quite frankly, we're blaming the tackles for a lot of it, but I blame the middle three because they're getting so much push.
Right, right. There's no pocket
to step
back.
There's
right.
no pocket for him to step up to help the tackles because the tackles count on
right.
taking them around. So.
Yeah. The old axiom is true. Tackles are responsible for the width of the pocket and the center
right.
and guards for the depth.
Right.
I mean, that's the definition.
There's no place for him to go. There's always people. So one of the reasons he gets passes knocked out the line of scrimmage because they're only a few yards away when he goes to throw.
Right.
Yeah. And, you know, Baltimore's made a living on it the last two times they played him. The last game of the year last year, they knocked four passes down in a row,
right.
four consecutive throws. And then Suggs, he gets hit in the helmet. You know, he's jumping like a kangaroo on a poco stick, and nobody's cutting anybody. You know, cut's a bad word.
There's no cutting. I've never seen guys just miss easy, you know, TT stunts and loops and they're just missing these easy stunts that we used to pick up like clockwork. And I know it's different, but it's not any different than when you and I played, Dave. And I go back to training camp. You can't have a club med training camp and expect your offensive line to be ready to play.
Right.
They can't. There's no way. And
do you think the collective bargaining agreement where they can't wear – they only are padded 14 times in 17 weeks of regular
right.
season.
Right.
And in preseason – you know, they talk about the quarterbacks coming out of college football with the spread offenses. The tackles and linemen, they don't know how to pass protect either.
Right. Right.
And you need all that time to work with them, and they don't give you time to work with them because of the collective bargaining agreement. It's like a catch-22,
right.
isn't it?
It is. I mean, if you think about when you and I went through camp, you went longer than I did, but I was still 6 weeks. That was 2 days hitting all
every
day long every day.
Yep.
And so you got to work on your craft. Today, they can't work on it.
So how do they counteract that? I mean, there's got to be something they can do in the offseason.
If you can't go full speed and you can't put the pads on to get used to going full speed and hitting full speed and blocking, you're not going to get it done. I mean, that's what training camp was all about, full speed. It wasn't, you know, you didn't brother-in-law until you got into the season, right?
Right? No
training
question.
Camp, you were
no
winning
question.
Spots. So,
yep.
I just think that's the biggest issue with all of football right now. I mean, you look across the league, look at all the offensive lines that aren't playing very well, they're
yep.
struggling.
There's more that aren't than are
right.
by a long shot.
Right.
I mean, you know, they say that, you know, there's only a handful of quarterbacks. There's only you know, less than a handful of offensive lines that you watch play and say, wow, it's a pretty good group. You know, right. I think Dallas does a nice job. I think they're pretty solid up front.
Think about Cleveland, how good Cleveland was supposed to be, and they're kind of okay.
Yeah.
Right. They haven't done a phenomenal job.
Spent a fortune.
Right.
Zeidler's the highest paid guard in the history of the National Football League. They got a center from Green Bay, Treader, day one. Zeidler, day one. They had $100 million to spend and couldn't spend it all. And, you know, Joe's a highly paid guy. Joe Thomas, who I think still plays at a good level. But, man, they Batonio, the high pick at left guard. You'd think that offensive line would be playing at a higher level than they are. There's no question about it. Yeah, so are you a believer that offensive line play, you have to have a real big handle on the guy next to you? It's like I used to describe it as like making a fist. You know, you don't think about curling your four fingers and wrapping your thumb. It just happens when a line is playing well together, and you got an unspoken word. You have to in this rotation stuff. Do you think that hinders that? Obviously.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely it does. I mean, I think back to our, you know, in the 80s when we were playing when it was Max and I, and it was Remington or Cause at center, whichever
right.
it was, and then you had Reimers and Anthony.
Right.
Well, we all knew what we were doing. We didn't have to talk to each other.
Sure.
You kind of was, you know, you trusted each other. And then when Max left, I had Jatan, then I had Moyer, and I had different guys that seemed like every other week, and you can't get cohesive. You
right.
can't get comfortable because you don't know, you know, if it's an ET or TE, what level are they going to be on? Are they going to be where they need to be? Or, you know, and that
right.
was kind of where Max and I, we had that feeling with each other, knew where each other was going to be. So I think it plays a big role in it. You just got to get used to each other. It takes a long time to do that.
What you've seen of Andre, do you think Andre deserves to be full-time at one of the tackles? Or do you think they should stay with the young guys?
I think they – I don't know. I can't answer that
question. It has gotten better since they actually started doing this.
Right. But
rotation.
He's not playing every play. That's the thing. So he's going in for a series or whatever, and then he's out, or however they're doing it. So
right.
he's not playing a full 65 snaps at that position. So it's got to be tough. I can't imagine going right to left-handed stance and
yeah.
getting everything turned around.
Yeah, he has – one thing that he's done, and talk to him about it, is he's he's increased his value because there's not a whole lot of guys that can do that, Joe.
Right.
Go right and be a true swing tackle, play right and left side. And it certainly hasn't hurt his value.
No.
I mean,
no.
When you're out there, he's got a one-year contract. You're out there now proven. He hadn't played left tackle since high school.
Right.
So now here he is in the NFL showing he can play the left tackle position. So for him personally, not a bad deal. We're going to have to take another timeout, come back and hit this offensive line play and a few other things. As we work our way through it, you're listening to the Bengals Pep Rally presented by Miller Lite at Buffalo Wings and Rings on the First Star Logistics Bengals Radio Network.
Is that right?
Welcome back to Bengals Pep Rally presented by Miller Lite at Buffalo Wings and Rings. We're in Crestview Hills, Kentucky, 2809 Dixie Highway, and we are again emanating from the First Star Logistics Bengals Radio Network. Got a couple of Bengals First 50 members with us here. Joe Walter, Jim Breach, though.
And
Joe,
Dave Lapham.
Oh, yeah, right.
You keep leaving yourself
yeah,
out.
Yeah, I was in that, too. Yeah,
I mean,
right.
Does that mean, that just means we're really old, right?
Yeah, no question about that.
You two are.
I got my Medicare card. You guys want to see it? I can't believe it. I didn't want it. They're like, oh, you're going to take it. Like, I don't want it. It's not like ARP. I never took my ARP card.
I don't know that many people that old.
What, for Medicare cards? Me neither. I thought when my granddad turned 60, I thought, he's done. It's over. Now I thought, hell, now he's a kid, you know. 60's
hey,
nothing.
Old is 10 years older than whatever you are right now.
Exactly, exactly.
Right now it is.
Yeah. So we have Jim Breach and Joe Walter till the 5 o'clock hour, and then Bengals running back coach Kyle Kasky will be joining us. Kyle's here with family, and he'll be joining us for an hour from the 5 to 6 o'clock hour to talk about all things Bengals as well. You mentioned during the break, Joe, you had a great comparison. Carl Lawson, who I think, and a lot of people think, is the defensive rookie of the year right now.
Right.
Who's making a bigger impact for his football team than Carl Lawson is coming off the edge for the Bengals? And you had a great comparison to a player. Who was that?
Yeah, William Fuller. He played with Houston and then ended up with Philadelphia.
Right.
Same body, same type of pass rush. You know, he's got that short, compact body. And I just hated. He was my biggest nemesis. I hated playing against him.
Because of his leverage,
his height.
Because
of his leverage, his height. He had that hump move. I mean, you almost had to be more perfect playing against him than you did with Reggie.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
It was crazy. But and Lawson reminds me of that.
I'll tell you, when I first saw him day one at training camp and they put pads on and did a pass rush drill, and when he was converting speed to power just in the bull rush, and he had a really good bull, I'm like, whoa. And then he does the hump. Then he spins. I'm like, that's all you need.
Yeah.
I hope you don't throw out a bunch of others because you can kind of complicate
right.
things.
Absolutely.
I mean, all you really need is off a bull rush, you just need one other complimentary move, right?
Right.
You don't have to complicate it. But, man, that dude, he's a natural pass rusher.
Don't you wonder how he lasts as long as he did in the draft?
Well, it was injury. You know, I mean, coming out of high school, he was the number one defensive lineman recruit in the country.
Really?
He goes to Auburn, and he has injuries. He has an ACL. He has a hip injury, breaks his hip, fractures his hip. He comes back his junior year, has a 9.5 sack season, like 16 tackles for loss or whatever. Now, all of a sudden, you know, he's kind of back on some people's radar. The Bengals scouting department, like, though, I mean, they were on him. But they were going to try to trade up in the fourth round, the first day of day three, the first pick to get him because they weren't quite sure if others might. Nobody would trade. They still got him. But, I mean, this kid, he is legit. There's no question about it. We were talking earlier. You know, Jordan Willis in the third round from Kansas mm-hmm. State can play.
Right.
You know, Geno was the fourth rounder.
Right.
Michael Johnson's a third rounder. Carlos a second rounder. I mean, they don't have like a, you know, a top 10, top
right.
15 guy up and down that D-line. They got a lot of really good players, though. When you're playing against a defensive line, Joe, that can rotate in eight players that can all play, how tough is that?
That's really tough. I mean, because not only are you preparing for the guy that you're going to go against that starts, you got to know what the other guy's going to do when he comes in. And everybody has a different pass rush. And so it's really tough as a lineman. You've got to – it's one of those things I tell people all the time. You know, when I played against Reggie or I played against William Fuller or even Howie Long, and really everybody, but those are the three big guys, you
right.
had to bring your lunch bucket with you, right?
Sure.
You had to be prepared to be perfect technique-wise every single play. And so when you get those guys rotating and they all pass rush differently – talking about tough technique, if you're not spot on with your technique, you're going to get killed.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, because that's what saves you is your technique.
Right. Yeah, I look at this defensive line, and I think they're about to really start to deal because Michael Johnson's figuring out, you know, how to pass rush inside. He's using that height, that leverage to that height to his advantage, and he is playing with a low pad level. But
right.
quarterbacks, I mean, Tyrod Taylor's 6'1". Michael Johnson's in there pushing the pocket at 6'7 with his hands up. It's like trying to throw over a sequoia tree for Tyrod Taylor. And any quarterback, you get a 6'7" guy in his face, you know, and not giving him space to throw it, man. And Michael and Geno are starting to really figure out if they slide the protection one way, one guy will penetrate and pick those two guys off, and the
right.
other guy loops.
Right.
Whatever way they slide, that's the penetrator, and the other guy's looping.
Right.
They're starting to work that deal out, and now, you know, Michael's starting to figure out how to work with the defensive ends. I mean, I think they could be pretty formidable, man.
Oh, yeah, big
I think
time
they
going
could.
Down the stretch.
Yeah.
Stay healthy. I think they're going to be really good. And that's, you know, it's scary to have those two in the middle like that, especially Geno, because he's just such a disruptor in there. Then you add that. It's scary.
I mean,
it really is. Scary good.
Depth-wise, I don't think they've ever, even their really good year a few years ago, I don't know if it's ever been this good depth-wise. With the kind of talent they have on the outside with Lawson, Willis, Chris Smith can get out there. And
right.
They're tough.
You know, it's some guys, you know, have all this, like, real ridiculous athletic ability. It's like, man, that guy just jumps off tape or that guy jumps off the practice field. But then you have guys that are football players, like Ryan Glasgow is a football player. Just a lunch bucket, you know, I'm going to fight your tail. You know, I get good hand placement. My feet are where they're supposed to be. Just one of those football players that is just, you know, mix it up with you every
right.
single snap. He's one of those kind of guys. You'd love this kid. This kid is, I mean, he came off a Michigan team that was really talented. Had like, I think probably 10 of the 11 guys earned the NFL somewhere.
Right.
And the defensive coordinator who had an NFL background, when coaches would talk to him, say, he'd always talk about, he'd say, this kid right here, he's always where he's supposed to be, doing what he's supposed to do. This kid's like the rock of my defense. He was talking about Ryan Glasgow.
Wow.
So, you know, that's the kind of endorsement that, you know, then you look at the tape and it's like, son of a gun. He's, you know, he's not leading you astray. This kid's a real deal. And I was telling Jimmy, when the Bengals took him, I did a show with Chris Spielman up in Columbus. He and his daughter do on morning drive time. And he said, man, I know you guys get good draft, good picks in the first three rounds, but that fourth round pick, Ryan Glasgow, I know the Ohio State offensive coaching staff is like, they got a player. That guy's been a thorn in our side for 4 years. We're so glad Ryan Glasgow is not at Michigan anymore, you know. So he's just one of those, you know, Tim Crumry kind of guys.
Right,
you know,
right.
Plays the game that way,
right.
You know. I'm not saying he's Tim Crumry.
Right.
There's only one and only Tim Crumry.
Right.
But Tim would like and respect how Glasgow plays the game for sure.
Right.
You know. And he's got that, like Tim had and all the great ones. You had it. You can't play football on the ground. Balance is a million-dollar asset. Mm-hmm. This kid's never – he's balanced, you know. He's got that ability to just hunker down and balance up, you know.
Right.
And have that base, that strength.
Does he like to fight like Crumry?
He'll mix it up. He likes to get the last little,
deal. Oh, like Crumry used to.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Crumry, yeah. Yeah, it's unbelievable.
Although Crumry, he kind of went side 100 tackles 5 different times playing nose guard.
That's crazy. That's crazy.
It is. It's unbelievable.
That's
sick. Guys were getting like 20. I thought they were having a good year for other
teams.
He
wasn't even an athlete. That's the amazing thing.
But he was relentless.
He was relentless.
He did have balance, that dude. He was like trying to – it was like a tree that was planted. You know, his knees were over his ankles. His hips were over his knees, and he'd hunker down. Be like, what the heck? I can't – this guy, man. I remember it was my 10th year, his rookie year. And, you know, Friday is supposed to be, like you said, Joe, your brother-in-law a little bit, right. You know, when the regular season kind of rest up for the game. It's 2 days before the game. We're doing two-minute drills and stuff. He's coming 1,000 miles an hour, you know. And I'm like, dude, I'm 32 years old. I can't play 100 games. I can't do this every Friday. Well, get the hell out then, he goes. If you can't do it, get the hell out. Get somebody here who wants to do it. I'm like, gee. It's like I was sore on Sunday after going against him on Friday at practice, you know, for the game. It's like,
he probably did it every practice his whole career.
Unbelievable. He and Dave Remington. Remington's the first pick of the first-round pick.
Nightmare.
And he's in the 10th round, Crumry. So we got the nutcracker drill, and everybody's, like, paired up. So
was our first day.
Yeah,
we had just gotten there that day.
Yeah, very first day at camp. So Remington's supposed to match up with somebody else. Crumry jumps in there. I got it. I got this one. Smokes him. Forrest Gregg goes, do it again. Smokes him again. He starts yelling at Remington, I'm going to be your worst nightmare. I'm going to kick your tail every single practice, every single play. You're done. Remington's eyes were as big as hard-boiled eggs. And, I mean, Crumry was unbelievable, relentless on Remington. It was crazy. But that guy, he was the ultimate warrior, man. That dude was something else. The thing about Crumry, and you guys can verify that, the injury that he had, the grotesque injury that he had with, you know, the double fractures in both bones right above his ankle, below his knee, to play in the first game of the regular season the next year, are you kidding me?
Crazy.
Unbelievable. When he did that, I'm like, this guy's a Martian.
Yes.
He pain is.
He comes in from practice. The inside of his leg is black and blue from his groin to his ankle.
Right.
He never missed one play in practice. You didn't even know he. It's like, dude, what are you doing? Because we're talking about. I said, look at your leg. Because I'm all right.
He
would just go have an adult beverage and make the pain go away.
Yeah, I mean, that's what he was basically doing when he did it in the Super. He had the injury.
He's sitting in the locker room.
Sitting in the locker room having beer. They're like, I don't want those pain pills. Just give me some beer. And they're like, look, you have to go to the hospital. Infection might set in. No, I'm all right. You know, just give me another beer. No, we got to take you to the hospital. He didn't want to leave.
Yeah.
He wasn't
going to
go.
Unbelievable. That's how we came in at halftime there.
Yeah.
Amazing. So that 1988-89 season, I mean, Joe, unfortunately, you know, you have an injury at the end of the year. It's kind of a non-contact injury, right?
Yeah.
Coming inside for a cutoff
block. First year of the new turf at Riverfront. And, it was a pass play. And
it was
Charles Mann. I was going against Charles.
Yeah, yeah. Redskins.
And he spun, and you know the counter is to spin with him. And he hadn't shown a spin on tape. So it caught me off guard, so I spun. And when I spun, my foot stayed caught in the turf and popped.
They say the majority of those kind of injuries happen
You felt it right away. Did you hear it?
Oh, I heard it. Yeah. Felt it. Oh, yeah.
Sound like a gun went off, right?
Oh, yeah, big time.
I had one of those deals where I'm on the wedge on a kickoff return on the road, and Samoa, Jack Thompson's cousin, remember him, the fullback? We're on the wedge, and we're double-teaming on a kickout block, and I swear I thought a sniper shot a gun. I hear this really like a gunshot, and then I hear him, and I look down, and his Achilles had snapped, rolled up into his calf, was all in a big ball, and he's like, it literally, when that Achilles snapped, it sounded like somebody fired a .22 or something. I was like, I couldn't believe that. I mean, I'm thinking, where did that come from? Who's taking shots at us, man?
Didn't he go limping one-legged down the field trying to get in?
He's crazy.
And he was still trying to make a play somewhere. Yeah.
I remember we were at a training camp deal, and they had a training camp, quote, party at the end, and the entertainment. He did the Samoan slap dance. Never seen anything like that. That dude was slapping himself all over his body faster. It was perfect. Perfect rhythm, perfect timing. Like the Samoan slap dance.
Samoa from Samoa.
Samoa
from Samoa.
Can you
imagine calling the international operator on that one?
So we were talking a little bit about it, but training camp. You know, Joe, you mentioned. I remember in 1975, we played in the Hall of Fame game. We had seven preseason games. Seven games didn't count. Six and then the Hall of Fame game. And I'm like, seven games didn't count. Don't really get paid. Don't get paid till the season starts. Getting killed twice a day. You know, I'm married. I got to be in bed by 11 o'clock in a curfew. What am I doing? This NFL ain't what it's cranked up to be, you know. I'm like, what is going on? Seven games, though. I mean, college football, back then you played 10 or 11. It's like we're playing seven that don't mean anything. That was crazy. But you talk about hard work. Training camp in those days, man.
Oh, I can just imagine.
Something.
I mean, y'all didn't even have helmets, did you?
No face mask, leather helmets.
That's right.
I had to have a leather helmet because the bucket head anyway. I had to have something that could be a little flexible and pliable up there.
So I got a quick training camp story if you hear funny. You may even, I know you were probably there. So it was a rookie show.
Yeah.
And I'm a rookie, right? And so I'm having to play Mike Wilson. If you remember Mike,
Moon Pie, my guy.
Redneck, you know, so
with the birthmark?
With the birthmark. And so I had to walk like him, and he was the biggest redneck there ever was, right? I mean, the biggest ever. And so we were doing a Price is Right skit. Do you remember this, Jimmy? And we go down, and I'm walking like Moon. I got him down to a T, right?
I bet you did.
As I'm walking, before I go down, before they call me, Robert Jackson slaps his napkin on my face. Unbeknownst to me, it had ink.
Oh.
And you don't say anything about the birthmark.
Oh, man. Oh, no question.
So I'm walking down the aisle, going down, they call, and all I see is Reimers and Blados. They're going, oh. What are you doing? And I get down there, and we do this Price is Right skit for Kennebrew's two front teeth, and I don't want, all that crap. So I'm walking back out, and they're all looking at me. You're dead. You're dead. I'm going, what are you talking about? They're all going like
this.
Oh,
my gosh.
I went, oh. I took his jersey off, and I sprinted. I thought, I'm not going to the party tonight. I sprint to the office to get Coke, right, to go back up to the room. I got the Cokes filled. I turn, and there's Moon. He sprinted behind me.
Wow.
And he goes, don't you ever, wait a minute, Moon. I didn't do anything.
Right.
It was Robert Jackson. Go kill him. He got all shaky and was going to, scared me to death. I thought, I saw my life, my life pass before my eyes.
Do you remember, it was,
there was a lot more to that story, but I kept it real, real clean.
I hear you.
Remember, I was maybe 92, he came in the locker room after a game. So you're talking about he's one of the biggest rednecks ever.
Right.
He's got an earring in his ear.
Yeah.
I mean, he's just like.
He had jewelry everywhere.
Oh,
right.
Moon Pie, what
Moon
happened?
Pie. Yeah. He was a big jewelry guy. Charlie Alexander made the same mistake. He and Charlie were going at it all week. This was in the 81 Super Bowl season. And so Charlie, we're on a road trip. Charlie goes up to the flight attendant and says, you got any grape jelly dispensers? And so he gets like 10 of them, puts them in a little pile in Moon Pie's seat on the plane. And he goes, Moon Pie, your birthmark's fading. Thought you might need these. Moon Pie gets on the plane. He walks by. Kenny and I, and Moon Pie's sitting with Turk. So Kenny and I are Turk. Moon Pie gets on there, and he walks back, and he sees you. He starts swelling up. Who's responsible for this? Starts slapping. I'm cleaning it up. Slaps it. Charlie runs in the bathroom, locks himself in, wouldn't come out. The flight attendant says, sir, you have to go sit down and fasten your seatbelt. No! No, I'm flying in here. I'm not. He would not come out the whole flight. He was scared the moon pie would take him apart.
I can see Charlie.
Oh, my God. No! He's like, no way. Absolutely not. All right, we got a lot more for you. Story hour. I love this. And you're listening to Bengals Pep Rally presented by Miller Lite. And we're at Buffalo Wings and Rings, and we're in Crestview Hills, Kentucky. And we're on the First Star Logistics Bengals Radio Network. We have Jim Breach with us, Joe Walter with us, and I'm Dave Lappin with you as well. And we're having a good time on the air during breaks, having a lot of fun. In a matter of minutes, Kyle Kasky, Bengals running back coach extraordinaire, will be joining us for an hour of Bengals Line, or Bengals Pep Rally, I should say. Bengals Line's Monday, Pep Rally's Friday. Bengals Pep Rally to finish the show with us, discussing what the coaches do during the bye week. And you know, the players have a lot of time off. Coaches don't really get that kind of time off. The coaches are still
they don't do anything.
Still grinding it, you know, grinding a little bit, you know. So with all that's gone on in terms of player safety and everything and all the concerns, would you guys have played the game of football? Knowing what you know now, would you guys have played the game of football?
Well, you can't ask a kicker that.
I know. Jim would definitely. Jim would definitely have played.
Why would you even think about asking?
Would you?
A kicker
would
that
you
question?
Have tried to make all those tackles you tried to make though?
Yeah.
The,
yeah. How many yeah. Did you I mean, tell you what. It was. I mean, 18.
18 tackles.
Wow. How many
about
years
that?
You play?
25.
like high school playing. Yeah, I would. Yes, I would have played.
Sure.
Wouldn't think twice about it.
Me neither.
Wouldn't think twice.
Yep, me neither.
Because I mean, I don't believe in all of it. I think it's.
You think it's all built up?
It's all built up.
See, my thing is they say they donated 112 brains or whatever to get tested. Well, all those families knew they were messed up.
Right.
I'm surprised it wasn't 112 of 112.
Right.
You know, I mean, they knew they had issues, and it was exacerbated by a bunch of things, you know, the way you lived your life and how you handled a lot of things. Playing football, just, you know, playing football by itself does not give you all the issues that they're saying that it gives you. I mean, there's other factors involved. There's a ton of other variables, extenuating circumstances top to bottom.
You know, one thing it will do is it creates more technology. People start researching it more.
Right.
Learn how to hopefully do something about CTE and get blood flow going back to the brain and those types of things. So I think it probably benefit because I don't think there's a lot of research being done into the type of things they're doing now to research it and to you know, help the brain recover.
Right. Right.
So ultimately, it might be really beneficial.
You know, and really, the biggest thing is some preventive measures, you know, be proactive rather than reactive. And they're trying to improve the equipment. And Luke Kuechly was wearing the Q neck collar that they've come up with now. Sanex is wearing it here, the Sanex football team. And it's kind of designed after a woodpecker wraps his tongue around his neck to protect his head when he's beaten on a tree the whole time. He doesn't, you know, get concussions from that because he's braced his tongue. And it's that kind of thing that bracing to make sure that if you take a hit, I mean, basically, you take a hit and your brain's moving, and then you hit the, it hits, you know, it's stopped by the helmet and the brain keeps going and hits your cranium. And somehow they can slow that inertia of your brain down, I guess,
well,
is what they're trying to
do.
It's
kind of interesting with the way these guys train today, they really got away from training the neck and strengthening the neck.
Right.
And they find guys who have stronger necks have fewer concussions.
Right.
Not that they eliminate them. If you're at higher altitude, you get fewer concussions. Mm-hmm. So what that creates maybe greater blood flow when you're at higher altitude. You've got to, body's got to work harder to get blood flow to the brain. Does that create some kind of cushion?
You know, to me, I know Mike Webster very well. God rest his soul. But, I mean, I played in all the college all-star games with him and everything, and he was 222 pounds, center from Wisconsin, Big Ten center, 222, strong as an ox, could plow a field without a horse, you know, big, just a farm boy. But he makes the Steelers, I make the Bengals. I see him less than 6 months later, he's 258. I'm like, what are you eating, Mike? Anything he tells me, John Cole. So he was shooting steroids in his derriere to bypass his kidneys. He's shooting right in his butt.
Right.
Well, and he's, you know, he's shooting them all the time. And he's, you know, he'd lift weights. He'd do, like, supersets on the bench and stuff after games. I mean, he was just out of his mind. And, I mean, the guy ends up having major, major issues. not just CTE, but, I mean, the steroids and everything else. He pulled all his teeth and super glued them back in his mouth. And that's how messed up he was mentally. Didn't know his son, didn't know anything. Died homeless, you know, under a viaduct in Pittsburgh. I mean, it's those kind of things are sad, but it wasn't just playing football. Right. I mean, obviously there were extenuating circumstances in that storyline, but I don't know, whatever. We're on our CTE soapbox, I guess. But,
I've really been brought down now.
I know, right?
Because I keep thinking I've got a concussion right now and not really knowing where I'm at.
Did you ever have one? You had to.
Hell, I don't know. I had my bell rung 100 times.
Right, right. All those episodes are, are, you know.
They're all catching up now.
Yeah.
I even had
You know where
of
we
those.
Are, though, Joe, right? You know where we are.
I have no idea.
Holy Grail?
You know? Oh, yeah.
We're at Buffalo Wings and Rings, yeah, we are. And we're in Crestview Hills, Kentucky. This is Joe. Joe's basically the mayor of Northern Kentucky.
I know.
No, not at all.
His golf event.
And honestly, though, I mean, what you're doing in the community with the Salvation Army, with the Special Olympics.
Goodwill.
Goodwill. And Special Olympics. CTE.
You know? That was a concussion moment.
That was pretty quick. You jumped on that right now.
Well, I was out of my moment. I was
right. But I mean, you're doing a lot of great things in the community. I mean, and you've done it for a lot of years. So hats off to you and your family.
Thank you. Have a blast doing it.
That's a big commitment, and you're helping people that need help. You know,
that's it. That's what it's all about. Man.
Yep,
giving back.
Giving back. That's key. Well, that's Big Joe, JoJo Walter, Jim Breach. We're wrapping up hour number two here, getting ready for Kyle Caskey. And if you had to pick one thing as we wrap up this hour. What the Bengals need to improve on the second, or not the second half, but the final 11 games, what would it be? Real quick.
Me, offensive line play.
Offensive line play. Absolutely. Offensive tackles in particular?
The whole line.
Whole line.
I kind of have to go that direction, don't you? Which
clean sweep.
Improved running game because, better.
Got to be able to get the running game going because I'll tell you what.
We have the running back coach coming up.
We'll talk to Kyle. We got a hell of a running back in Joe Mixon. There's no doubt about that.
It's Kyle, fault, isn't it?
Kyle Caskey joins us after the break. Hour number two in the books, and we're going to be back to have more fun on Bengals pep rally over here in Crestview Hills, Northern Kentucky, Buffalo Wings and Rings. We'll see you in a bit on 1530
ESPN. Thanks, guys.
ESPN. Have a good one. Bengals pep rally. How about that? 2 hours in the books, and they went by so fast. Jim Breach in the house. We had Joe Walter. I'm Dave Lapham. And in this third hour, we've got running back coach Kyle Caskey, who we're really looking forward to visiting with because coaches' lives are interestingly difficult. And during the bye week, it's got to be a challenge for sure, particularly when you're a husband with a young son and you got your beautiful family here with you here at Buffalo Wings and Rings. We're at 2809 Dixie Highway in Crestview Hills, Kentucky. We're presented by Miller Lite. And we're on the First Star Logistics Bengals Radio Network. And first of all, welcome, Coach Kyle Caskey in the house, everybody. How about a big hand for Bengals running back coach Kyle Caskey? Thanks for coming out.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
So, what's the first thing that a football coach does during a bye week in the National Football League?
On a day off, the first thing I do is sleep in.
I hear that.
I didn't set an alarm today. I've got a great wife, Kayla, over here, who said, "Listen, I got you this morning. I want to go to yoga later, so if you can watch the kid later and do some things."
Right.
Yeah, I slept in this morning. That was the first time I've slept in a while because really, even after our Thursday game, we usually have a mini bye, but we had the coaching change, so we ended up working quite a bit that weekend. So that's what I did. But, you know, we worked up until yesterday. So we worked through Thursday at noon, and then we've been off. And we really spent a lot of time this week looking at ourselves and what can we do better and where's the issues at. Some of the issues are obvious, and, you know, we're finding ways to fix them. And other things are, you know, how can we get better with the players we got? You know, we obviously lost Tyler Eifert this week, and we know we're not going to have him. But, you know, we haven't played with him for the last 3 weeks.
Right.
So it's not like it's a shock to our system, but we're trying to say, okay, now moving forward, we got these guys. Let's figure out what we can do. But, you know, now that we're off, I'm up here hanging out with you guys, and it's presented by Miller Lite, right?
Miller Lite, yes, it is.
Miller Lite's good. So that you ask what coaches do on a bye week. Sometimes we unwind and have a chance to be a normal person for 3 days. And you know, people go, well, do you want to stay away and not watch football? And you know what? I watch probably more football in the bye week than I do,
sure,
you know, on weekends, because I get a chance to just sit back and just be a fan. I don't watch it as a coach. I watch it as a fan.
Right.
So what is your typical week like during a regular week?
So on Mondays when we come in, we usually have early morning film review with the offensive staff, and then we go upstairs, we meet with the ownership, and we get either attaboy or, you know, what are you guys doing,
right,
type of thing. And we go down, meet with Marvin. We talk about, you know, what we need to do better and where we need to go this week. And then we have a chance to meet with the players on Mondays. Then Monday night is more of a, all right, every coach break up. You guys go work on your different sections. And Tuesday morning we come together and we have a run meeting. Then we have a protection meeting. Then we have a pass meeting. And by 7 o'clock on Tuesday night, we have the base game plan in and third downs. And then script, draw cards, get cut-ups made, and come home around 10 o'clock probably at night on Tuesdays. And then Wednesday mornings you come in, players are there, practice, meet, install. Wednesday night, short yardage, goal line, red zone, get home about 10. Thursday, practice, meet, install that stuff. And, you know, it's a little bit earlier of a day. Get home around 6 probably, get a chance to have dinner with the family. And,
right.
You know, go out, maybe have a dinner somewhere. And then Friday is a cleanup day, really, for everything we do. It's a final, here's what we're putting in. If there's some tweaks we need to make, we make them there, because we don't want to do anything on Saturday when that comes around. So Friday is that. We've moved on to a system now where Friday is a really light physical day for the players. So we really make it a mental day. So if there's some mental stuff we need to go through, that's the day we do it and get it all out of the way. And Saturday is, you know, cleanup. Really, it's not even cleanup day. It's just come out and let's move around. Let's hit the last things. Let's talk about our openers. And Saturday night, we hit the openers with the guys in the meetings. And then Sunday, you go play. And it all starts over again.
In this era of the National Football League, the bye week not only gives you a chance to self-scout, examine yourself, and, you know, detect tendencies and maybe work, you know, to alleviate some of those, but also in this era, you can get access to tape and everything so quickly. If you say, if somebody realizes, man, I'll tell you what, the Washington Redskins are doing an unbelievable job in the red zone. What are they doing? Let's get some tape and take a look at that. Oh, defensively, so-and-so is doing an unbelievable job, you know, with sudden change. What are they doing? You can get all this information so quickly, can't you, that you can not only self-scout, but you can find out who's doing things around the league so well. And the NFL is a copycat league, just like every league, you know. I mean, if I'm sure that other teams are grabbing what you guys are doing well as well. I mean, does some of that go on as well?
Yeah, we have every game from Sunday will be available by 8 o'clock on Monday morning. Our video staff will come in and they'll have it all in there. And then the NFL gives us enough statistics to throw in there that we can go find red zone, third downs. We can find different things like that. Then by about Tuesday, we can have any breakdown we really want, because that's when all the other stats get put in there. And so, yeah, we do go dig through that. I know on Saturday mornings, the last thing I do with the backs is I always pull the explosive runs or catches, anything that a running back in the league did. And I throw in our stuff from the last week. So, you know, I go, okay, we need to be at the top of this thing. So every time I show this to you on Saturday to see what these other backs are doing in the league, I want you guys up at the top. This last week, when we showed the film, obviously Gio had that 61-yard
right.
Screen touchdown
right.
in Cleveland. So he was actually only number 4 on the list.
Really?
Wow.
But, you know, so we've had times. I know Jeremy's had some long runs that have been number 1 on the list. And, you know, it's one of those things we pride ourselves in is, you know, we need to make some big plays. And but I also do that for the reason of, kind of like you said, you know, seeing what other people are doing around the league. You know, how are they attacking safeties?
Right.
Are most of these big runs because they're actually wide open holes, or are they making people miss or running people over? What do we need to do better to make some of that stuff happen, because we're not making enough of it happen right now? So I'm trying to make a bigger deal of that as we go forward.
Yeah, it's an interesting profession for sure. You know, as a running back coach, you have a very interesting background in that you played tight end at Texas A&M, high level of football, playing that position. Then you have worked with the offensive line. Now you're working with the running back. So to me, you know, your overall knowledge of run game, pass protection, all of that is a nice cocktail mix of experience to impart to your running backs, and you can really teach them how, you know, they work with the offensive line and protections and how the glove has to fit the hand, so to speak. I mean, it has to be a nice fit, right?
Yeah, sure. And with my knowledge of protections, which that's kind of a heavy part of my game planning, is I handle a lot of, you know, their issues on pressures and different things. When I meet with those guys, I tell them all the time, we drafted you to run. I am what I am. You cannot put me out there, and I would not make any of those runs you guys are making. So I can tell you how to get there. I can tell you how the blocking is setting up for you, but we've drafted you guys to make the plays.
Your instincts.
Yeah. Now, when it comes to pass protection, not a lot of running backs are taught pass protection coming into the NFL. They really aren't.
Right.
They can say they are. They're really not. They're told, okay, yeah, you got this guy.
Right.
Go get in his way. But you can't do that in the NFL. These guys are too good. You have to have some technique to you. And working with the offensive line, I've actually taken some offensive line technique to pass protection of, you know, just using where you, you know, hand placements and just, you know, how we attack and run people by and hands on the hips when you get, you know, you get some sort of spin move, you throw your hand on your hip, you know, it stops the spin and different things like that. And they're kind of, they look at me like I'm crazy.
Right.
But, you know, it works. And it takes them a little while to trust in it because I think they've been told for so long, hey, just go hit the guy.
Yeah.
But really, there's a lot more to it. And then once they see it happen, Gio Bernard's the perfect example. It took him a while to just go, okay, I'm not just going to go hit the guy. I said, Gio, you're already, you know, 4 foot tall. You might as well just go in. You know, you already got the leverage. You go in and now trust me with your hands. Trust me with your feet. Trust me with what I'm telling you on that because you're already there. You can be so good at this. And that's why he doesn't get really run over as much as you think a guy of his size would.
Yeah, I mean, he's willing, to say the least. I mean, Gio.
Is that the biggest thing, these guys, these young guys coming out, like a Joe Mixon?
Hold on to that thought, Jim. We got to take a quick timeout here, and we'll be back with Bengals running back Coach Kyle Kasky to talk about that position and what they're doing with the Cincinnati Bengals. You're listening to Bengals Pep Rally, presented by Miller Lite at the Buffalo Wings and Rings location. Dixie Highway, Crestview Hills, Kentucky, on the First Star Logistics Bengals Radio Network. Back once again to Bengals Pep Rally, and we're presented, as always, by Miller Lite, and we're at Buffalo Wings and Rings this week, this Friday. We're at the Crestview Hills, Kentucky location, 28009 Dixie Highway. And as always, on Fridays and Mondays and Wednesdays and Sundays and every time the Bengals are on the radio, we're brought to you on the First Star Logistics Bengals Radio Network. Jim, you had a question that you were asking
kind of Coach Kasky. Yeah, kind of along the lines of, you know, with the Geo thing, you got Mixon coming in there this year. How well is he? Obviously, he's playing a lot, so he's picked it up pretty well. But, you know, so he's a little bit bigger back. You said Geo's got a little bit of leverage, can get under guys. What about for a bigger back and or Jeremy Hill when he came out?
Well, they got to learn to bend their knees a little bit. And, you know, it's as offensive linemen, Lap, you know, it's that's the first thing they tell you is you know, bend your knees. Don't bend at the waist. And there's a lot of times that these backs want to come in and they just want to lunge their body out. But they don't realize that these linebackers, like normal college linebackers that are just going to come run into you.
Right.
These are long-armed, you know, really, really top-level athlete linebackers. Now, he might have, you know, Jeremy and Joe probably played against some of those guys in the Big 12 and the SEC, but on an everyday basis, every single one of these linebackers is that way. And they're going to come in, they're going to grab you, and they're going to throw you, and they're going to swim you, they're going to do different moves. They're not just going to run straight into you. So you can't just go throw your shoulder into them. And Jeremy did that a few times, I know, his rookie year, and it drove me crazy. And the first thing I tell the backs, I say, if you can't pass protect, I will not play you.
Right.
And I've got the backing of the offensive coordinators that backed me. That was Hugh Jackson's thing, too. He believed that 100%. And, you know, I know Marvin believes in that. If you can't pass protect, you're not going to see the field. So these guys learn quickly. And Joe has done a good job. Joe had a missed scan in the preseason, and he heard about it for about 3 weeks. And he's been okay since then. Now, that the missed scan didn't hurt us because he didn't get to the quarterback.
Right.
But, you know, so probably
describe what you mean by a scan to the listeners.
All right, so when we set up a protection, say the back is offset to the right side of the quarterback, most of the time the line will be taking the four down linemen,
right,
and then the backer to the left. that means the backer that's pretty much straight ahead of the running back, that's who he has. So right. You have five offensive linemen. They're going to block those five guys, and they don't deter from that.
Right. And the line points out the linebacker that they're going
to
be blocking.
That they're going to go to. Right. So they're going to go to those five guys. But if the backs guy doesn't come, but then, say, the nickel from the other side, from the left, so he's offset on the right, the nickel from the left then blitzes, he's got to scan to the other side and go pick that
get
up.
Over there, yeah.
And there's a lot of times that young backs – They haven't seen enough rotation with safeties. So a lot of times in football, when you rotate those safeties, it's giving away a lot of stuff, because if you send the safeties to the down and they're moving towards the left, somebody's usually coming there because they're going to replace somebody.
Right.
And they don't just move guys down to put two guys in one spot. They're moving guys around for a reason. And once they start realizing that, it goes a long way. And then, you know, then the techniques of attacking things, and like you said, for a bigger guy, they just got to get lower. They know that they can't just go stand straight up, because these linebackers are going to get low. Linebackers are taught that from day one as you know, peewee football players.
Sure.
You know, get low and run through people.
Yeah, get the pad level down. You've got an interesting scenario where you've got talented room. Three second-round draft picks. I mean, you know, in a very short period of time, all highly competitive, all successful, you know, coming out of their collegiate careers. And it makes for an interesting dynamic in your room. How do you handle that as a coach? I mean, how do you handle the competitive nature of it? And what are the guys like in the room? What's your room like in the running back room?
Number one, I really do believe that they all like each other, which it sounds corny and kind of elementary, but the fact that they do like each other helps out, because they pull for each other, they help each other out. Gio being the elder statesman in there, and he's only 25 years old.
Yeah.
he does a lot to help those guys out, and him and Joe have come along quite a bit with the third down stuff in particular, all the protection things, because that's been Gio's thing, and helping him out. But I think with me as a coach, the thing that I've just got to keep doing is just being honest with them.
Yep.
I can't tell them something and then go out on Sunday and beat something different. You just have to be honest with them and say, this is how it's going to play out this week. And, you know, you're probably going to get more reps this week. You're probably not. Here's your role for the week. And it's been a lot better, I'd say, in the last few weeks, because we've come around to, okay, we're starting to find roles for the guys.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, you know, unfortunately, we haven't broken any runs. And, you know, our average looks bad, which I'm not happy with one bit, but you know, we just got to keep finding ways to make that happen. But when it comes to the dynamic of the room, they're great. And I'm, like you said, I got three second-round draft picks, and it's a great group to be around. I enjoy coming around them every day.
Sure. Bill Lazor, offensive coordinator, that took over in a tough situation two games into the regular season. There's a change, and Bill Lazor is assigned to call plays. And the three games that he's been the play caller, guys have averaged 25 points a game, 350 yards. I mean, things are percolating a little bit, and really have not had Tyler Eifert in those three games. Tyler was available for the first couple of games of the season against Baltimore and Houston, but not against Green Bay, Cleveland, or Buffalo. And also, you haven't had a guy that can stretch the field. That number one draft pick, John Ross, you know, stretching the field on the other side of things from A.J. Green, that could be so dynamic. With all that said, how difficult was it for not just Bill, but everybody on the staff to basically, you know, get it together in a short period of time? And how long have you guys been yearning for the bye week to kind of collectively, you know, catch a breath?
Yeah, I've only been through this one other time. In 2007, I was coaching for the powerhouse Indiana State Sycamores. And
yes.
We were 0-4 at the time, and we fired Lou West, got let go, and it's the only other time I've had a coaching change like this in the middle of the season. But it was different with that, because we kind of blew the whole thing up after, you know, and we just never got better. Nothing changed. It just was a change of people. But
right.
This one, you know, when we made the change, and I've been around, you know, I've been around Kenny Zampezi for a long time. And, you know, it's hard when you see a guy who you've been around with for that long that happened to him. But
tough business.
We didn't have a chance. We couldn't sit around and sulk about anything. You know, it was all, you know, we were all a part of it too. And we had to sit down and say, how are we going to fix this? And we all looked at each other, and we were all basically, when we sat down, okay, you know what, Bill, you've got the coordinator title now. But, you know, 24 hours ago, you know, we were all assistants in here. So how are we going to fix this? And, you know, okay, let's figure out where everybody's strengths are. And you know, we not only us, but what do we think the strengths of the players are? And, you know, we just rallied around each other. And it has been kind of nice to have, you know, this break this weekend because, I mean, I'll be honest, we're kind of tired of looking at each other too. So,
yeah.
You know, but it's going to be good to come back and get going because I think we've rallied around each other. I think the players have rallied around us. And I think the players took it personally too because it does when somebody takes the fall for what your production was,
right?
I think a lot of those guys took a little offense to themselves and said, you know, shoot, apparently we weren't doing it either.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think that's what's been good about us. We got a good enough group that can rally behind it and make up for that.
Yeah, it's good that everybody looked in the mirror and realized it's just not one guy, right? I mean, everybody contributed. Yeah.
So, Bill or Kyle, what's your background? Where'd you come from? You know, you obviously played tight end at A&M, mm-hmm. but what was your progress to get yourself to where you are today?
Well, I'll start with my parents. My parents are both teachers, and my dad was a coach. And my dad was the head football coach at A&M Consolidated High School when I was born, which is in College Station. It's the big 5A school there. And he hooked up with the English teacher, and there you go. So that's
the rest is history,
that's
right?
How I came about. Moved around a couple times, and my dad became a principal, and I went to Dangerfield, Texas, which is in northeast Texas. So if you ever seen the movie Varsity Blues.
Oh, sure.
Mm-hmm. It's basically – it's kind of about where I'm from.
Okay, you know? Okay.
No whipped cream bikinis or anything. But, you know, it's one of those things. It's a small-town football. It's all we were about. I mean, and so – my dad was my principal. My mom was my English teacher.
How about that?
So I didn't get away with a whole lot, and they knew about everything that I had done before I did it, pretty
right.
much.
Right.
Went to A&M as a walk-on. I ended up walking on there as a tight end. It was really more of a fullback. Tried out for the 12th man a couple times.
A Ryan Hewitt type guy?
Ryan Hewitt type of guy, yeah. And, you know, we won the Big 12 championship. It's actually, I didn't realize this, but the last conference championship A&M's won, I was on that team in 98.
There you go.
I'm not real, I can say I'm proud of that, but I'm really, if you look at it, I'm like, come on, guys, we got to win one.
R.C. Slocum.
R.C., I'm telling you, we had a heck of a team back there. Actually, the punter, my teammate that was the punter is Shane Leckler.
Yeah.
He was 2 years older than me, and he's still kicking.
Still doing it.
That's amazing.
He's still kicking.
Yeah.
But no, so then when I finished up at A&M, I was also a discus thrower. I was an all Big 12 discus thrower, believe it or not. I was on the track team there, and that's I actually got a scholarship to throw there. So I ended up just being full time track my last 3 years. And then I went on and did business, moved to New York City for a year, goofed around up there for a little bit, ran out of money. And my dad said, you know, I can get you a coaching job. And I said, all right, you give me a coaching job, I'll move back. Within 2 weeks, I had two offers for two pretty good sized high schools, Cedar Hill and Temple. In Texas,
Temple,
and I ended up going to Temple, and it's North Austin, and my position coach, Tam Hollingshead, was the head coach, and he hired me on there. But then I worked at A&M summer camp. Dennis Francione, I talked to him. He was the head coach at A&M at the time, and
right.
he's on the cell phone, and he goes, hey, I got a call from Charlie Weatherby, the head coach at Louisiana Monroe. He's looking for a graduate assistant. You still want to be a graduate assistant? I said, yeah. So he throws me on his cell phone. So I'm talking on Francione's cell phone, and he's like, you know, Weatherby's like, come, hey, can you get here by 8 o'clock tomorrow? Sure. So I got there by 8 o'clock the next day. I interviewed, got the job, and I was there for 2 years. Stole Kayla through there on my way through.
And there you go.
She's followed me around ever since, which I still don't understand. And we went to Indiana State in Terre Haute, Indiana. We went to Ole Miss for a year with Houston Nutt in 09, and then I've been here since 2010. So
amazing. I'll tell you, this – it's always a path, an interesting path, and we'll talk about the life of a football family for a coach, a Bengals assistant football coach. That's Kyle Caskey that you heard right there, Jim Breach and Dave Lapham with you as well. It's Bengals Pep Rally presented by Miller Lite, and you're listening to the First Star Logistics Bengals Radio Network. Welcome back once again to Bengals Pep Rally. We're round and third and heading for home, as the old left-hander, beloved left-hander, used to say. We're at Buffalo Wings and Rings, Crestview Hills, Kentucky. And we're on the First Star Logistics Bengals Radio Network, as always. Time to show off your stripes this season. Visit the Bengals Pro Shop at Paul Brown Stadium or shop online at ProShop.com. www.bengals.com, and be sure to visit the Bengals Facebook page and follow the team on Twitter, Instagram, and Snapchat for the latest news and updates straight from the source. And we've got a great source here with us, Bengals running back coach Kyle Kasky. You heard Bill Lazor talking about, it's good to get that bye week and take a look at the big picture. And you already described some of the things that you guys, have done during the course of the bye week. How much have you attacked the Pittsburgh Steelers, the upcoming opponent, or is that going to be later on in at the end of this week, or we already are Friday? Does it not start until next week, or have you already taken a good little look?
No, we started looking at them because, really, if you have a little extra time, you might as well take it. But,
sure.
They still have another game to play. And,
right.
And we don't just take that for granted that, we've got all this film on them and this is what they are. We still want to see what they're doing this week. And personnel-wise, just seeing, hey, how did their personnel change from last year to this year, and who are the guys making plays, who are the young guys that they maybe are playing in place of older guys, and I think that's the biggest thing we looked at this week. We didn't go too much into an actual game plan and putting plays together,
right?
But looking at what are the issues with their defense, and I'm coming from the offensive side, look at what are the issues, and we'll compare it to Sunday's game against Kansas City and see where we are on Monday. But it gave us a little bit of a head start, but it's not like we put together a whole game plan right now. We're still going to treat it as a normal game week next week, and we get a little extra time on Monday with the players, and we'll use that to just reintroduce them. Nobody in our building needs to be introduced to the Pittsburgh Steelers.
Right. Right.
It's no different than any other game. It's a division game on the road. I get that. It's the Steelers. I get that. I hate them almost as much as I hate the Texas Longhorns. But, at the same time, it's one of those things that you have to treat this as a just a game. This is one of the games on the schedule, and we got to go win it. And it doesn't matter if it's the Steelers or the Chargers. It doesn't matter. We got to go play them. So we just got a little extra time.
So.
Well, when you look at the Steelers, though, real quickly, one more thing about them. Yeah, they've been gassed a little bit in the running game. Jacksonville gassed, and they beat them on a 90-yard touchdown run. They've given up 136.5 yards a game on the ground, which is 28th in the league, 5.1 a carry, 31st in the league. They're only allowing 139.5 yards in the air, 3 yards difference, leading the league, and 5.36 per attempt, leading the league. So they struggle to stop the run. Is there any thought that, hey, maybe we can get on track against these guys? Or, division, though, that's always tougher because everybody knows each other so well.
Yeah, and we thought the same thing this past week, but we knew Buffalo had a good defense, and we thought we were going to go out there and get something going, and we think that every week right now. But, I'll be honest with you. People can look at the Steelers and say, oh, well, they're struggling, this and that. How often does Big Ben throw 5 interceptions?
Right.
Doesn't
right.
happen that often. And that
twice.
90, yeah.
Twice in his career.
And that 90-yard run at the end of the game kind of helps with stats. But their defense is still playing really well. They're still playing like the Pittsburgh Steelers. Like
right.
When you watch them, they still look like the Steelers. So it's not like we're looking at them and going, oh, this is going to be, this is going to be our time. We still go into it with, hey, this is good defense. We need to get ourselves right. And we'll go into this thing and find ways to attack them and just go into it. Like I said, it's any other game, and they just happen to be wearing that really ugly
right.
black and gold that they wear. And
I hear you.
We just have to go out there and beat them.
They're Steeler week.
They're still human beings wearing helmets. So
absolutely.
Yeah, Forrest Gregg. Remember Forrest Gregg say, "Son, it's like whistling through the graveyard, right? You acting like you're not scared, but if you're scared of the Steelers, just." You can get up and leave right now.
Right. We don't want you participating. So if you had to pick one thing that you've kind of uncovered during the bye here that you want to impart, whether it's something different to do or some kind of message, whatever it might be to your running backs, have you determined that yet? Is it still processing with you? Where are you on that?
Do your job. It is it's as easy as that. And the reason I say that is still trust in the fact that those guys are going to block for you. All right. It may not have worked out the way you thought on some of the plays, but the second we start to stray away from what we do
yep.
and doing our job, it makes the guys in front of ours jobs even worse. And we can't do that. So I've really stressed to these guys, listen, we're a very talented group of backs. We need to continue to trust that this thing is going to work. And when it starts to work, you'll understand that. And that's the biggest thing I've come out of this thing with.
Sounds good. We got one more break to take, and we'll come back wrapping it up with Bengals running back coach Kyle Kasky. And you're listening to Bengals Pep Rally on ESPN 1530. We're at Buffalo Wings and Rings in Crestview Hills, Kentucky. And obviously, we're on the First Star Logistics Bengals Radio Network.